morning, everyone, and welcome to our school board meeting. It is 10 o'clock on May 11th. We are in a workshop session, which means that there is no public participation. This is for the purpose of greater understanding and discussion by the school board. So would everyone please silence your phones, and we will rise and give the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Welcome to those who are in the audience as well as online. We'll start right away. I would like to introduce the dais to you just in case you may not know us. To my left is Mr. Carl Persis, representing District 4. To his right is Mr. Ruben Colon, representing District 5. To his right is our school board attorney, Mr. Ted Doran. To my right on the end is Erin Lieben, our agency clerk extraordinaire. To her left is Mrs. Erin, Anita Burnett. She represents District 2. She's our newest member, having recently been elected. Next to her left is Ms. Jamie Haynes, my vice chair for this year, representing District 1. To her left is our comeback kid, Dr. Scott Fritz, our superintendent, and I'm Linda Cuthbert, your chair. I, too, am a comeback kid. I'm celebrating growth today. So, thanks. I'm your chairman for the year, and I have to get another mask because it keeps coming down. I'm your chairman for the year, and I represent Southeast Volusia, which is District 3. So thank you. So we'll start with 2.01, employment benefit contracts for 21-22. Dr. Fritz.
I'd like to ask Ms. Beth Swallows to come up and representatives from Aon and board members just to give a little introduction. You'll remember we did a work session back at our last board meeting. And some of the discussion that had come out were some of the reports that the insurance committee had come forward and shared. And that presentation was one that the board members had questions. And so we agreed to get together today. And we've asked our members from our insurance committee, if you guys could raise your hand if you're in the audience. Thank you very much. We asked them to be here. And the way I envision this workshop going is board members being able to address not only the folks in front of you, but also those members of the committee, so that we can get very clear direction from you all today where we proceed, because it's important that we have a direction at the end of today's workshop so that Ms. Swallows and her team can go forward and put the best package together for our employees. Ms. Swallows?
Thank you, Dr. Fritz. Madam Chair, board members, welcome. Good morning. I'm going to go over the agenda real quick, and then I would like to turn it over to Jonathan Anderson from Aon, and he'll go through the detailed slides of what the committee agreed upon. So we have the recommended renewal options, the recommended plan designs, and the recommended rates, and then benchmarking. We included school districts that we had provided in the past, but we included them again in correct me if I'm wrong, Jonathan, but we added Flagler to that list, so we wanted to be all-inclusive there. And then the request was to compare us to the counties, the surrounding counties, so we've included that as well. Then we'll open it up for questions and decisions. Jonathan?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, board members. Thank you, Dr. Fritz, and thank you, Madam Chairwoman. If you look on the on the Insurance Committee renewal recommendations for 21-22. This actually shows on page 6 the option that the Insurance Committee chose, and I'm going to give a little background. There were two original caveats to the renewal, and those caveats are in the back that you've seen before, and then Florida Healthcare Plan and Blue Cross came back with another option that the Insurance Committee chose through vote. I'll also recognize that the plan designs that were voted on twice before were voted on again. So for the three straight voting times, we have the same plan designs that were designed and approved by the Insurance Committee. And I'm here to just deliver the results And obviously, you know, as you had mentioned, Dr. Fritz, there'll be some discussion. So under option three, this was the option three that was chosen by the insurance committee. I want to make sure that I'm real crystal clear with this. What Florida Healthcare Plan came back with is for October 1st, 2021, there's a renewal offer of 5.2 that remains in place for all alternates. But they did come back with another option as far as a guaranteed rate for at 6.5%. If you recall, the prior recommendation was coming back with an 8.2 with the option to go out to bid, but this is a guaranteed 6.5% rate cap for the following year. So under that, the renewal cap comes with a caveat, as we talked about before, and under this renewal guarantee of 6.5, if it comes in at 6.5 or less, that the school board will agree not to go out to RFP, RFI, ITN, or any other formal request for carriers to provide different coverage or change carriers for the 10-1-2022 time period. The other component, as you can see on this, this includes that the should Volusia School Board release an RFP, RFI, ITN, or any other formal request for the carriers to provide coverage for the 10-1-2022 renewal cap with the 6.5 or lower, that the school board would have to reimburse the investment that FHCP made with the 3% reduction, and that would equate to about $1.8 million. So a couple things to consider as you think about these different options and the committee voted on. The rate cap of the 6.5 is what Aon is projecting for trend for next year. We did look at the claims, and you have that from the last meeting. Generally, when you look at June, July, August, we're seeing an average loss ratio of about 98% for 2020. And then this year, 99% is the current projected, what we think the loss ratio, you know, has been running. So the reason I bring that up and bring it to your attention is that as we look at COVID, and we know that some of the claims in COVID, the elective benefits have been delayed by a number of, you know, not just this school board, but across the country. We would probably expect to see a surge in potential claims of people wanting to get their elective benefits done before the end of the year as they're coming back into the plan. I think the elective benefits could also increase depending on what the board decides to do relative to the benefit designs. If benefit designs are changed, then there'll be a tendency for people to use their current benefit designs to max out their benefits and their opportunities and limit their maximum out-of-pocket as well as their deductibles and co-insurance. So just something to consider as you have this conversation today.
Mrs. Cuthbert.
Yeah,
yes,
any questions?
Yes, Ms. Haynes.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I understand this correctly. So what our current insurance plan, what the group is saying, they'll come in at 5.2% for the 21-22 school year, and they will go ahead and do 6.5%, or will they do lower if it's lower for the 22-23 school year? But if it comes back at 8.1, they're not going to raise it above the 6.5?
That's correct. It's a rate cap.
But once again, they're throwing in that piece that was thrown in like 2 years ago where it's like, but if you decide to go out for bid, which that's what's gotten us into trouble all along, is the fact that we haven't gone out at times for bid. They're holding our feet to the fire and saying if we go out for bid, though, we're going to have to pay $1.8 million.
Yes, that's correct. And I believe the if I'm not mistaken, it was historically a number of years that the school district didn't go out to bid. We did take it out to bid 18 months ago. And they came back with the 1.9% increase with a cap of the 8.2.
Right.
So I think, you know, generally we see our clients go out to bid every 3 to 5 years per se. And so, you know, if you look at the timeline, it's within the timeline of normal groups going out to bid anywhere between 3 and 5 years if you decide to, you know, accept this.
So I'm assuming you're not, like, we're not the only group that you represent.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
So looking across the board at the other groups you represent as well as us, I'd like your honest opinion on where these numbers are at compared to what you see when you are negotiating for other groups.
Yeah, so when you look at the renewal based on the numbers, I mean, it's a fair offer in my opinion.
Okay.
What we're seeing with our other groups is and I'll show you the county and cities that you'd requested. A lot of our self-funded groups, we go in and we share with them that you should project in your projections being self-funded, you should use 6.5% or 8.5%, depending on what number we come up with this year. It's 6.5% is what we're projecting and sharing with our clients is what they should use on their self-funded accounts. I can also make a statement that says sometimes when you see these benefits with self-funded groups, they may not be fully funded relative to the premium that's needed. And there are years where I've got clients that may have to deposit $5 million into the account in order to make sure they hit the state statutory requirements under the 112.08. And so there are years that follow sometimes where they have to find I've seen clients have to find $10 million because they didn't raise their premiums or their revenues or change their benefit designs in order to meet the minimum requirement. And once you fall below under a self-funded account, then the state starts calling you, and they want to see a 3-year plan of how you're going to pull yourself out of that. And so, you know, there are some clients across the state that are in that particular situation, and they have to find those additional funds in order to meet the state minimum requirements of 60-day of funding of claims.
Okay. As I said, I just wanted to make sure that I clearly understood, though, what you were saying here.
Yes, ma'am. And just to clarify
go ahead.
To clarify, the 5.2 is on is the renewal for the current design. And so what we have here are the adjustments to the plan designs and the price points relative to what was chosen by the insurance committee unanimously.
And I just struggle with, I'll be honest with you, the fourth bullet there. I don't appreciate it when people basically put you between a rock and a hard place and go, well, if you step out, though, we're then going to turn around and charge you. So.
Yeah. Dave Shandell, the CEO of FHCP, is here if you'd like to hear his comments.
Maybe a little later, but
okay.
Thank you very much.
Perfect.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Okay. The next page, on page 7, these are the plan designs that were chosen, as we mentioned earlier, by the insurance committee. All the red areas where the benefits have changed from the prior, from the current year. And we went over this pretty extensively at the last meeting. I'd be happy to go over it again if you'd like me to. But deductibles on the HMO have gone up. Out-of-pocket has gone up. As well as on the triple option, there was changes in that particular benefit design where the deductible was raised and the maximum out-of-pocket was raised. And then on the POS plan, that was raised to the $2,700 deductible. And as Dr. Colon had mentioned at the last meeting, you know, the pharmacy components are very competitive when you look across the benchmarking, and the access points are competitive with your wellness centers that FHCP offers at $8. And on the right side, you know, again, we just wanted to make sure that we recognize the caveat that's involved with this renewal offer, because they are mutually inclusive as far as the offer goes. Overall, on the HMO, it's a 1.4% increase. As you see, the Florida Blue plan was at 0. The triple option actually is a decrease of about 2.5%. And then the POS plan is represented at about a 4.1% increase with those benefit design changes. And on page 8, this is the money page, no pun intended. But as you can see, what we compare is the current contributions to the renewal alternatives that were voted on and approved by the insurance committee. On the right-hand side, you can see the dollar changes as far as differences go. So under the Florida Blue, there's no difference. It's the same price points. It is extremely high, but there are, I think, 8 people still on that particular plan. And under the HMO, it's a $5 increase, $10, $9, and then $13 for the family under the Florida Healthcare HMO. Under the triple option plan, you'll see in the red on the far right, those are the reductions in the employee premiums. And then on the bottom right-hand corner, that is the POS. Generally, that's been the zero-cost plan that's been offered to the employees. And on the far right, again, you'll see that we recognize the caveat. Any questions on that? Okay, so benchmarking. So we were asked to go get the local counties as well. That's behind the school district benchmarking numbers. I will share that, you know, eight out of the 13 districts are a 1-1 effective date, so they will be going through their plan design changes for 1-1 of 2022 currently. And so as we look at these particular numbers, we're comparing the current versus what is current for 2021. And as we look at these, again, the deductibles, we look at Volusia compared to the other districts. So Volusia has, there's 6 that are lower, 3 are the same, and 4 are higher under the deductible component. Out of pocket, there's 2 that are lower, 11 that are higher. Under coinsurance, we see that Volusia, you know, there's 11 that are lower, 1's the same, and 1 is higher. And then under the employee contribution, there's 4 that are lower and 9 that are the same. When we compared these plans from a benchmarking perspective, we were comparing the lowest cost plan to that the employee would be charged to the POS, which is 0. And then under the board contributions, you know, we see where Volusia is lower than 9 and they're higher than 4 based on the selected benchmarking school districts. Any questions on that? Okay. So here where we identified the different school districts, if you look on the far right-hand side, we identified green where Volusia is more competitive, red where Volusia is less competitive, and blue is more of a neutral when you try to compare copays to coinsurance or deductibles. That's how we compared them. So if I were to take a look at the Brevard as an example, their deductible, Volusia, again, look at Volusia County being compared to Brevard. Their deductible is a better deductible under the non-wellness component. If you look under coinsurance, coinsurance is 20% for Brevard and 10% for Volusia, so Volusia has a better coinsurance. The out-of-pocket max is red because it's a higher in-network out-of-pocket. And then copay is slightly higher under this particular plan for Volusia. Volusia is 35 and Brevard is 30. If you look at the bottom part, which I think is, you know, we went back and we put these also where Volusia is better, it's green. So anytime you see green, Volusia is a better choice. Under the Brevard plan, the employees are paying $106.67, and the monthly board contribution is $505.72. Under you know, Flagler, you'll see where actually Flagler Schools is paying, their employees are paying, I'm going to get my new glasses, $66.94, and the contribution is $542. Again, the school board's paying more. When you look at Highlands, the school district is paying, that school district is paying $778.84 for the employer's paying that, and the employee is paying nothing. And then under Hillsborough, which is a fully insured as well, they're paying zero. However, the school board's paying $648.51. And this goes on continuously when we compare the school districts.
If I might say, you just need to take note that Hillsborough is the only one that is fully insured. Everyone else is self-insured. So there's a little bit of difference there as far as funding.
Yeah. And I would ask, would the board like me to go through each of these, or would you like me to get to the board, the county?
I do have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
We know that Hillsborough County is in some financial straits. As they come through their self-funding, are they going to lower their contributions in order to save money?
So Hillsborough is fully insured. As far as what their contribution strategy, if that changes, I'm not aware that that's in the plan. They're a 1-1. So they've already made the decision for this year. So it would probably be a conversation for the 2022 period. You know, they were at $100 million. I think I was reading this morning, they're, you know, I think under $5 million or $10 million as far as making the recovery.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Anyone else from the board? Questions so far? Okay. Thank you. Continue.
Yep. So I'll move on to page 15, if that's okay with the board. These were the requested Board of County Commissioners, the local counties and cities. When you compare this, again, we're comparing it to six other counties where we see that the deductible is the same or higher on five of those particular counties. Volusia County has higher out-of-pocket max on six. The coinsurance, though, is lower on four out of the six and higher on two. Now, this is, you know, the employee-only contribution is lower on four and the same for two. And then when you look under the board contribution, Volusia's contribution is lower than four out of the six. We've been having a hard time getting Lake County's information as far as what the board is contributing there. But if you go to the next page, again, just to clarify the benchmarking, anything that's green means that Volusia County is more competitive. Anything that is red means they're less competitive. Under the Flagler County, we'll use that as an example. They're a 10-1. Going through same chain, you know, same conversation that we're having today as far as benefit design, I'm sure, and contribution. Their deductible is at $500 and $1,500. Their coinsurance is a little bit higher. It's 10% higher than the current coinsurance for the Volusia board. And then the out-of-pocket is a little bit less with $4,000, $8,000. Their copays are about $10 less at the $25. And then where you see the specialist, Volusia Schools is better there. Volusia Schools is better with hospital services because they have to hit a deductible, and then they have to do coinsurance at 20%. The others are pretty neutral except for major diagnostic tests where, again, Volusia Schools has a better plan, and the county actually has a 20% co-insurance after deductible. And then below that, you'll see where their co-pays for generic are at $10, which is a, you know, a little bit higher than the school district. The preferred brand is a little bit less at $30, and then the non-preferred is a little bit less at $50. The contribution is an interesting couple interesting facts there. Their employees are actually paying $25 a month for their insurance. The board contributes the $875. And as you look across, you know, the bottom, you'll see that there are other districts that are, counties that are paying below or higher. But three out of these four, the employee actually pays for the health insurance. Okay. And again, apologize for Lake. That seems to be super secret as far as what their contributions are, but we do have the other contributions for the other counties of Seminole and Volusia County over on the next page. So when you may hear that benefits are better, I think you have to look at contribution, you have to look at benefit design in order to really compare the two. So under Seminole County, you can see there's their benefits, again, in red means that Volusia is not as competitive, but the green is where they are more competitive. So the coinsurance has consistently been better in these in your plan for against Seminole. And then the deductible you'll see is $500 and $1,500, and the max out-of-pocket is $3,000, $6,000. These are 1/1/21 benefits. They'll be discussing what the plan design changes. Or, as I mentioned before, when you're self-funded, if there's a shortfall in the premium, sometimes there's a check written to the general fund to support the 1/1208. And then at the bottom, you'll see where the employees will pay with, if they don't take a wellness exam, you'll see with wellness, there's no cost, and without wellness, there's an $80 cost to the employee, but the employer for Seminole will pay $843.86. And then on Volusia County versus against the government here, you'll see where they do have a $0 deductible, zero coinsurance, $5,000, $10,000 max out of pocket, $20 for a PCP visit, $40 for the specialty visit, and in the middle, as far as the options, those are pretty consistent where Volusia is. And then I would look at their pharmacy costs. You can see retail, they're paying $20. And then for non-preferred, they're paying $55. But at the end of the day, the Volusia County government employees are paying $87.96 today, and it's being funded at $588.62. So this was the request from the board that we attain this information. I hope this was helpful. I didn't know if there were any questions or comments that I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, Mr. Clone.
So I appreciate you all doing all of this research. Interestingly, it just quantifies my thought process all along, and it's that the plan that we've been asking for folks to provide a bid on is, you know, when I look at these other plans, they look more like what most people have today versus, you know, and so that's part of the reason why we are paying so much, because what we're asking for is extremely generous, and it's not sustainable. And so when I look at the county government, which is, you know, what we hear a lot of, you know, a lot of folks say, well, the county's got it better. Well, yeah, they have it better because we're paying for it. And so, you know, there's no doubt that their contribution is higher, and I think that you have made a very good point that we really need to look at our contribution. I just believe that what we have RFP'd for and what we've asked all of these companies to bid for just is not in line with insurance plans today. And as a result, our employees are having to pay for it to the point where it is very difficult to even cover a family member because it's just so much. So I think the plan design is where I have the plan design is probably where our issue lies, looking at all of these other deductibles and seeing where we are compared to other folks. I think we really need to examine what we're asking for and whether it's sustainable without having to continue to have that board contribution be. You know, you're going to pay for it one way or the other. Right now, our employees are paying for it. And that's, you know, I think this is something we seriously have to look at.
Yeah, and so if you look at the plan designs that the insurance committee chose, that they have made those adjustments. And so, you know, when you move your deductible up, your coinsurance up, max out-of-pocket up, those decisions, you know, were made by the insurance committee to make those changes.
Correct. But my point is, if those had been there from the beginning, would we have had other providers chiming in and saying, you know what, I mean, there are people who wouldn't even touch us because what we were asking for is going to be a loss. And so now, a year later, and this is, again, of no fault of anyone, a year later, now all of a sudden there's this request for all of these increases. Well, heck, if that's what we had asked for before, maybe, you know, it would have been considered differently and we would have had other folks, you know, put their name in the hat to provide services for our folks. And so, you know, I hear loud and clear. I mean, looking at all these other folks, I think as a board, we seriously have to consider our contribution. But what I know is that unless we change anything else, we're just going to keep going in the repetitive wheel and never really address it. You know, again, you know, times have changed. Healthcare has gotten more expensive. It's more expensive for everybody to provide. And so, you know, it's just striking that delicate balance of what we pass on to our employees versus what makes them not go to the doctor, what makes them not go have that procedure done. You know, we use round numbers like 10%. Well, 10% can be a lot of money. And when you're out of pocket is, what's that, annual maximum, $6,000, I'll share with you, you're going to get lots of bills. And I lived it just recently, having procedures done, where I finally called one doctor's office and said, hey, man, you guys, everybody's telling me deductible, yet I've paid this much money already. What's going on? Oh, sorry, we weren't supposed to bill you, and on and on. So, you know, $6,000, whoa, that's a lot of money. I mean, and so that's why I think, you know, these round numbers look sweet, but that can turn into $6,000 very quickly at a hospital. So, again, I think, and I appreciate your research. You have told us that, you know, we have a problem, not to mention, you know, we also probably as a board need to consider, you know, taking some of that burden off, but doing one and not the other is not going to make this better for anybody. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colon. Someone else. Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just have you, John, address some of the points that Mr. Colon brought up in relation to the design of the plan is what is holding back other people from wanting to bid on this. I mean, you've seen a lot of plan designs, I'm sure. Is our plan out of whack with the others? I mean,
so that's a trick question.
I won't get offended. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's
a trick question.
You could say he was wrong. I'm okay
so
with that.
So, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of sometimes in the self-funded world, there's some hidden numbers. And what I mean by that is if you don't fund it, you, as I mentioned before, that deficit comes up, so you still keep the plan designs. I've seen school districts keep the same plan design for 3-4 years, never put an increase in, keep the plans the same, but they're short on their funds, $10 million, and they have to make that up. From a competitive standpoint and from a bidding standpoint, you know, the district had showed long-time partnership with Florida Healthcare Plan, which a lot of carriers do respect and appreciate. With the network that is present in the Florida Healthcare Plan, any disruptor You know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 80% of the members go to the clinics and the facilities at FHCP. When some competitors look at that, they may say that if there's 80% disruption, what are the chances of me attaining the business? And so that would be something that, you know, we could address from, you know, if you wanted to talk about clinics or self-funding. And the self-funding solution set, there's some innovative opportunities out there in the self-funding space, and innovative companies that focus on musculoskeletal and diabetes, and we're seeing some good success from a virtual care solution set. So it just depends on where the board wants to go. When you look at a fully insured design and you look at competitors, they have their discounts and their discount analysis. So they will look at where the current claims run and how they can compare to their discounts. And sometimes I've worked for carriers before where we wouldn't bid on business that was in an environment where we didn't have a good discount because we couldn't make money, and we would put ourselves in a financial, you know, situation that wasn't acceptable, and you come back with a 30 or 40% rate increase. Mm-hmm. And that's not good for your reputation or brand in the marketplace. So, you know, when we did benchmarking last time we met, the benchmarking of where your claims costs were very competitive to all the, you know, the 13 groups that we looked at. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if you're willing to look at some different solution sets on the self-funding side, then you've got to be willing to address the financial component, and you have to be disciplined. Like I said, if you're not disciplined in how you approach this long-term, you know, I would think you'd want a steady increase or flat but steady, mm-hmm. and be financially solvent. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those are pretty tough decisions to make.
When the insurance committee is meeting and discussing these options and the plans, are you there too?
Yes. And Lucy Ann.
And so you're, as they're asking questions and deciding, you're there guiding them too on the pros and cons of the whatever decisions they make?
Sure, absolutely.
And Beth, you're there too?
Yes, I facilitate the meeting. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I am.
And in your opinion, I mean, is this pretty well fleshed out? I mean, are they talking about all kinds of options, or do they kind of just want to stay with this plan and get it for as low a cost to them individually as possible?
The committee does a good job. I'd like to speak to the renewal and then, speak to competitive, but when the renewal comes, obviously this year was an 8.2, they look at how that impacts the employee plus services as well. So Aon presents different options that the committee can discuss, and they too go through how does this impact our employee. And this year we did a short survey to find out what the employee really felt about their insurance. You know, what are your needs? And they took that to heart when they made the plan design changes. I think we ended up with 15, if I'm not mistaken, of plan designs to discuss over the series of meetings. It's not taken lightly, and they do take it to heart as far as how it impacts everyone. What we don't discuss, or haven't since I've been in the position, is the fact that, well, we just went to market, so typically you don't talk about going to market the year after you've gone to the market. So, but we don't talk about a complete change. Maybe that's a discussion we need to have, because I think what occurred, and not just with the medical, but all the benefits, was we asked to match what we currently had, and I think that was difficult, especially in the arena of medical. And because we're unique. We've got a long-term relationship with Florida Healthcare. We've been self-funded in the past with the Volusia Health Network and the coalition with the college and the county years and years ago. So we've gone down different paths, but if I can say, maybe we should have explored other options. I think last year was our opportunity. I just don't know if time permitted. But as Jonathan stated, typically, and it may have changed, I haven't checked with an auditor recently, but typically auditors like you to go to the market every 5 years to see if what you have is competitive. But this is where we're at right now, and I think it's something that maybe we should explore going forward and discuss. What is the desire of the board? You know, what will meet our employees' needs? Maybe survey again in more depth. What the employees, how they utilize the plan. I mean, we know how they utilize to a point, but it would be a drastic change, I think, for our employees to go to a fully insured, you know, out of the market, off the market plan, I guess you could call it. Is change good or bad? You know, it's change. You'll have disruption. There's always noise with change, but it's not anything we can't get through as long as we have a good company that gives good service. And I think that's what's really important, and a competitive price for our employees. Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of utilization of the $8 workforce wellness, which in the regular world is like a clinic, which I think makes it affordable for our employees to get service. And we're going to do some education on that as well, because I think there's some opportunities for people to after hours, that type of thing. But in general, that's what's happened in the last year, and I hope I answered your question, but that's the big picture. We do discuss all the options, and the committee, had to commend them. They do a good job of working together to come up with a consensus.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. I'm happy to hear that, that you're there, John, you're there, everything is talked about, their questions are answered. I mean, I really value that committee because it represents all of our employees, and, you know, we may look at it as a board just from the financial side of things, how much is it costing us? When I say us, how much is it costing the school district? What's more important to me is how the employees feel about it and what they think matters most. And so if we can reach that balance to do what the insurance committee people want, mm-hmm. and since they represent the employees, then whatever we can do here, and maybe some small way to make it better, you know, great. If we can't, at least we know that the committee was unanimous in their recommendation to the board. So really, if we go along with this, we're just really following the recommendation from the insurance committee, which also had the input from all of you, sitting here and answering their questions. I just wanted to make sure that they weren't operating in a vacuum and just, you know, trying to respond to their own employee groups, mm-hmm. But not really knowing the ramifications of decisions that they may be making. So I thank you for that. Just want to thank again all the folks out there that served on the insurance committee.
Beth, could you share some of the conversation that happened in the insurance committee and also the votes that went forward so that the board can understand that?
Absolutely. When the renewal was presented, of course, we presented alternates, and the conversation is around also the survey results because, and we shared those with the board. They took that to heart when making plan design recommendations. So they would vet what was presented and then ask for other alternates. And we went, I think, 3 rounds of that. And they really do a good job and also bring up the point of what was indicated in the survey. So I think that's important. They're not just willy-nilly picking plan designs and trying to get the rate down to zero or what have you. And I just really think that's important. And after all of that vetting and then the return of additional relief from Florida Healthcare, we had additional meetings to discuss that. And the end result was keeping the plan design changes as recommended, and if the board did not take the caveat, that would be a 4.3 overall on those changes. But then with the caveat, the vote was 3 for the first option, 4 for the second option, which is with the caveat, which locks us in. That's this year's renewal and 1 year of 22-23 without going to the market. And they felt like the 6.5 was a good option because of the trending of the claims. And we may be, you know, at a higher than 6.5 next year when we present the renewal. So they felt that was the best option for right now. We haven't talked about exploring other options, but maybe that's a conversation we need to start having and have with the board, too, in the future. I'm a firm believer in planning ahead. So even if it's something 3 to 5, you know, if you do it in steps, I think your end result is much, much better. So,
in fact, if the board's desire is to do something different, like go for an RFP, the planning actually starts now to get that going. So when Beth and I talked about this, there really is a year of planning to get it right. So just wanted to make sure we put that out. But I also wanted you to hear the votes. While it was 7-0 to go forward with changes, it was not 7-0 continuously as they started to look at those changes. And I think that's important for the board to know.
Do you mind if I ask a question based on what Dr. Fritz and you have said? On slide 22, the vote option one was 3. Option one was 3 votes, option 3 was 4 votes. Could you break that down to non-bargaining and bargaining units?
Yes, the 3, excuse me, there were 2 AFSCME and 1 VIEW support. Mm-hmm. And the rest, I didn't break down the 4. I guess they would all be VIEW and
non-bargaining.
Yes.
So you're missing a vote because there's 8 people.
1 was absent.
Okay. So it could have been a 50-50 split had that one person been there.
Or it could have been 5, you know,
yeah.
3.
Five,
could,
3.
I mean.
Okay, thank you. And I'll wait to ask my next question when everybody else is finished.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Ms. Burnett, you have any questions? You're finished, Mr. Persis?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Burnett?
Thank you. On the options, all of them look as though that you are not able to go out for RFP at all next year. What did we look at anything with going out to RFP for next year?
Yes. So if you go to page 25, right? So these are the rates and the benefit designs if you do not go out to bid. So the plan designs are the same.
What if we wanted to go out to bid? I know it's typically 3 to 5 years. You said this was not to go out to bid, right? Page 25?
No, 25 is basically the same plan designs, and then the next page is these are the price points. So the prices would go up, and the total cost would be 4.2. And on the right-hand side is where all those increases would occur if you decided not to take the, you know, the 2-year deal. So this is, if you decided on option 1, that's why we put it in here, mm-hmm. that this is what the rates would be. The rates would change, and they would move to, on page 26, these would be the new increase and the new contribution levels. Yeah, that would allow you to go out to bid. That's why we put it in here. So if you decided, okay, we want to go out to bid, then these would be the new rates. They would take back that 3% reduction that they're that they are stating is an investment in the plan, and that would have to be funded by the plan.
I guess I misread on page 20 where it said without any RFP there.
Let me find page 20.
It says at the top, option one. You're saying option one, you're allowed to go out to
yes,
RFP.
Ma'am. Yes.
Right there it says without. Oh, I see. Without any RFP clause. Okay.
Right. So the committee recommended the plan design changes, which brings the renewal down to the 4.2. And there's no clause for RFP.
So that was almost a 50-50 split there.
Correct. That's right.
How is the committee selected?
The unions give us who's going to represent them.
Okay.
And then there's two non-bargaining, and those are the voting members, and then I facilitate the meeting. And then it's public.
So are the committee members, does that change every year, or is there some consistency?
Some have been very consistent. We've had a few come and go for various reasons. Mm-hmm. Some people retired, and then you have a replacement. Some people just couldn't keep up. You know, maybe their schedule didn't allow or what have you. Mm-hmm. John's been on the committee, I believe, 10 or 11 years. So he's pretty consistent.
And of the survey, we may have talked about this last time, but how many employees actually took the survey and responded to that?
Good question.
Lucien can pull that
She's
up.
She's got it?
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry, there's a few decks of presentations we've gone over in the past 2 months. We can look that up if there's some other questions. We can come back to that while we're waiting.
I'm just trying to determine, you know, where the buy-in is from the employees. I know that some employees don't take the survey because they feel like, well, my voice doesn't matter anyway, when it really does. But, you know, the survey was taken by 10% of the people. Did all the real questions get answered by the committee that would have been, you know, representative? Thank you. That's my question.
She's getting there. We've got the section now. So how many? Over 2,000.
And what is our employee total?
Over close to 8,000.
77 and change. And
so the survey was pretty low.
And that's, I think, typical.
Okay.
It was excuse me, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. It was a pretty quick turnaround, too. So if we embark on, you know, inquiring as to change, mm-hmm. then maybe there needs to be a little more detail to the survey. Mm-hmm. If we really want to know, you know, co-pays, utilization, that type of thing.
Yeah, it would be definitely interesting to know, really. I mean, and I know that's what the committee is here for, but is it more important to have less money out of your pocket and take that chance, or is it, you know, do we have a high amount of reoccurrence in the hospital where we need to have that deductible low? Is there anybody from the committee that has an opinion on that was able to talk to that today, or... Ms. Cuthbert? Is that appropriate, Ms. Cuthbert?
Oh, that's fine with me. Okay. Yes.
Ms. Cuthbert, I was going to actually ask if, because I realized with the space up there, there were four members I was going to ask if they had come up from the committee to start with. Not that I'm excluding the other four, but I have questions for them too, so I don't know if, since Ms. Burnett has headed into this direction, if it'd be appropriate to have four of them go ahead and come forward.
That's fine.
Yeah, thank you.
That's okay. As long as I'm just making sure we have enough time for other discussion for the next item on the agenda.
The four that
if they don't mind, and if they don't want to be one of the people, then I'm okay, and I'll take the alternate in their group. But I was going to see if Nicole Miller, Kathy Knowles, John Darby, and Dr. Barry Powell would come forward. And it, as I said, if one of you doesn't want to come forward, then I'm okay with the other person that represents your group. And Mrs. Burnett, I'll let you go ahead and...
No, you can ask.
No, you can ask what you wanted to ask, and then I have some questions.
Hello. Thank you guys for being a representative for your team to do the hard job of picking out insurance. I know that was a difficult task. So as my questions were, I was just wondering, when you look at what is available, did you have a good representation of what the needs were? Were the needs more, we want less out of our paycheck? Were they more, we're looking long-term as what our benefits were overall? Can just give me a kind of a synopsis of how you all chose what you chose.
Okay. And I ask you to please speak into the mic so people at
home
can
first.
Hear.
I think the survey that went out was very, people didn't understand it. It was very confusing on what they was asked on by the survey.
One of the concerns I had, this is my first year on this committee, so I've been in the district a long time. Mm-hmm. One of the concerns I have is MRIs and x-rays. MRI tells more of a story on a person than an x-ray, and those MRIs are going up, mm-hmm. and it can be critical for that one person, to where if we could have kept those MRIs to a lower and maybe hospitalization, going to the emergency room. An MRI is money out of pocket at that point, where is an emergency room, a hospital visit, usually they will work with you on a payment plan. Mm-hmm. So that was one of my concerns, is that we provided either the same or lower mm-hmm. for an MRI mm-hmm. than it is more critical for a hospital visit. Because, like I said, an MRI test tells more of a story of a person than an X-ray will.
Mm-hmm. And so what is your charge for the MRI?
$175, I believe it is now, currently.
That's the new price, or that is what we were paying?
I think that's what it's going to be. I think they kept saying, because my biggest problem on the committee is I represent SCOA, you know, I'm an ASCII president, but the majority of, like, I work with in the buses, you know, they make under poverty level, $4,000 under poverty. So I'm new to the committee, the person that's sitting in, and I came in, and so when I got in and was asking questions, you know, like, why this or this or this, and they said, well, this is the pieces of the puzzle that the board gives us, and we put it together. Because they kept saying, you know, why we just keep going up? And they said, this is what we get directed to us, and then this is what, we put the pieces of puzzles together and make it the best option for our employees. Because I said no to any added deductible. I didn't want any ADs in there. Because, my people bring home $200 every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then you expect them to go pay $175 for an MRI. Or, and then they said, well, the emergency room, that's $400. That's a month's pay for my people. So we've asked before, a sliding scale maybe for what, say the contribution. Because, what I pay or you pay, and these people are making $7,500 a year. I mean, it's kind of, everybody's paying the same. So there's not, Right. So that's a lot of my concern with the package is, I wanted to get away from all the after deductible because that could be, very large. And so even though, hospitals do work with you, but, that could be some, over their, their year, more than their yearly salary. So like you say, people do put things up until then it gets to the drastic worst when it could have cost, the county insurance a lot less at the beginning if they could afford to went and got it taken care of before it got, to the point that we're now, it's a lot more.
When the survey went out.
You need to speak into the microphone, sir.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
My name is John Darby, and when the survey went out, admittedly, there were only a quarter of the employees that responded, but it was a very quick turnaround within less than a week, and then collected the information. But the indications that we got from the survey were that employees would prefer to have premiums limited upfront, and then have have the consequence be that if you did end up utilizing plans, that would end up on the deductible side. Now, we didn't just pick those choices. When I've been on the committee for 10 years, there are certain things on the plan design that you can make changes to that are going to provide you with an opportunity to move the needle on cost. One of the things that we looked at, and we asked Aon to bring us the information, which was how many people meet the out-of-pocket max and deductible.
Okay.
And the vast majority of people do not meet the out-of-pocket max and deductible on the plans that we have. So if we went with that choice of a lever to pull, which would give Florida Healthcare the opportunity to provide us with some benefit because we pulled that lever, we knew that we were going to impact the fewest number of employees because most of them do not meet the out-of-pocket max. If you're not meeting the out-of-pocket max at $1,000, you're not going to meet the out-of-pocket max at $2,000 or $1,500 or $2,500 or $4,000, whatever it is. So from our perspective, or from my perspective, it made sense if we're going to make a change that is actually going to give us the opportunity to improve the cost of the plan, let's make it where it's going to impact the fewest number of people. So we chose to increase, and you can look at the recommendations that we made. You can look that we made the recommendation to increase out-of-pocket maxes and deductibles because it would impact the fewest number of employees. Is it perfect? No. Is it going to impact some members of our workforce disproportionately?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And to be honest with you, there are no good choices to make when we're talking about plan designs for insurance. So we choose the least negative option based upon the parameters which this board provides us, which is $550.63, I believe is the number. And we work, that's the playing field that you give us to play on. And we work with Florida Healthcare or whomever the provider is to pull levers. The levers that give us the most bang for our buck are deductibles, out-of-pocket maxes, copays. That's why you see that is what we made changes to. You do not get, we're not going to get a large movement in any plan design that we make by changing the cost of hospitalization, and I understand the point, because we actually do as a unit, as a school board, as a group, we do a very, very good job of limiting the number of employees that go to the emergency room. We have brought our numbers down, and at meeting after meeting, which we have the staff from Florida Healthcare come in and do a presentation to us on a regular basis at our WAP meetings, we are well below industry standards for the utilization of hospital. That, when it is not that case, that drives up the cost. So we've limited it there. So if we made a lot of changes there, we're limiting the number again. We're limiting the number of people that we're going to impact by increasing that amount there. So the choices, the point I'm trying to make is the choices that we made weren't just randomly picked out of the air. We asked Aon what are our statistics for utilization, for all the aspects of the benchmarking that's on the plan design, and we actually look for the areas that if we make a change to this particular thing, what is the impact going to be? And Aon takes those numbers, and they did this time as well, and we had, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was somewhere between 12 and 15 different options that we would sit at the table and say, what if you made a change to this? And they would go back, do the calculations, and bring it back to us, what would be the impact? But again, as someone who sat on the committee for quite some time now, we take it very seriously. I mean, we put in a lot of time, and when we go to an RFP, I've done many, many, many RFPs, and it is not a fun process to look at the spreadsheets and go hundreds of lines, line by line, looking at them. And last time, we only had one vendor that came in to bid, which was Aetna, and they offered a very good bid, but the problem is that they couldn't quite get there because they don't have the network that Florida Healthcare has in Volusia County. They could get us to, for instance, they own CVS, right? They're a partner with CVS. They have all their clinics in their location, their retail locations, but not all of their locations, retail locations, have clinics. So they couldn't actually quite get to the point that Florida Healthcare is at to offer services for $8. Any employee can go in for $8. CVS, Aetna could not offer it at $8. And they promised us that in the future they would get to the point where they would have capacity to be able to have locations all over the county, but they weren't there yet. So the point that I would like to make to you, is that, yes, we take it very seriously, and we do ask for the data in the background of what we're using, how we're using it, and how it will affect all the employees. And we try to make decisions based upon the funding that the board provides to stay within that parameter. And this time, the recommendation was to make those changes to the out-of-pocket max and the deductibles, and to go along with the request, the caveats, if you will, of 6.5 to get the cost down to 1.3%. And when you flip over to the second page of the plan design in this deck and you see the cost that it, how it impacts an employee, we looked at those numbers. And that's one of the things that's a driving factor for the choice that we made. And if we go with the 4.2 but maintain the right to go to RFP, which it, the board has that option, absolutely, then you will double almost. I mean, I have to look at the numbers. But you will double, and in some cases you might 2.5 times increase the amount that the employee will be paying out of pocket for their premiums. But from the survey that we got, that was not the desire of the vast majority of employees. They would rather take the risk of having their money in their pocket and the possibility of having to pay for services in the future. So that those were the driving factors in the choices that we made.
Thank you for explaining all that and how you came up with it. I appreciate that. I know it's a hard job. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Have it covered.
But like I said, when you have a fourth, it costs you $400 to go into the emergency room, that pretty much deters most people from even going. So that's how we've driven that cost down. But we keep raising that. And when, you know, people see that, then that's when they're not going.
But when we look at that, and again, I'm getting older now, so my memory is not quite what it was when I was 21.
Sir, I can't hear you.
I'm getting a little bit older now. My memory is not quite what it was when I was 21, but I believe that our hospital utilization numbers are somewhere in the 150 to 160 range per 1,000. And Jonathan and Lucy Ann can probably correct me if I'm wrong. 181?
Sorry, 170.
171. But the number, when you speak with, of course, our WAC committee, and we talk about other organizations, I think that we are considerably below what other organizations are at. They're more in the 200 range or higher. So, yes, to the point that's being made, if we increase the hospitalization cost to 400, that is negatively going to impact some members. But since we have a limited, since we do very well on that aspect of our plan, it's going to negatively impact a fewer number of people. So that's just to provide you some background on how the decision is.
Well, and I see that you have urgent care options, which are much lower than an...
I missed the point. You have
urgent care options, which are much lower than an emergency room.
Correct. For $8, you can walk into any clinic that's spread out all over the county for Florida Healthcare and receive those services. And we did have a robust discussion about the $8 clinic and the wellness clinic and the usage, and that was one of the purposes of the survey going out, which didn't quite end up the way we wanted, but we tried really hard on getting that information. But when you look at it for $8, anyone can go in, and we did get clarification because there were questions. Well, if you go in and you see a provider in the $8 clinic and you have an issue that warrants a referral, do you then get referred back to your primary care physician and have to pay another $20 in order to be able to get your referral? And we got that clarified for us that, no, that is not the intention of Florida Healthcare, that you should be able to walk into that clinic, see that provider for $8, and if you need a referral, they should give you a referral. And if they don't, then you reach out to me or somebody else, and we'll get with Beth, and we'll get with Florida Healthcare, because Florida Healthcare has indicated to us, as Dr. Zuckerman sat at the table and told us, he's the director of medical services for them, that that is not the case. And if there is an instance where someone did not get the referral and did have to pay another $20, to please let him know so that he can resolve that issue for us.
Okay.
So we try to keep the cost down if we can, and it is an education piece. And we've talked about that for a number of years, how to get that information out to people to please utilize the wellness clinics and the $8 option to keep things down. Now, that does not necessarily solve the problem of the cost of imaging.
Right.
But again, the vast majority of our members are going for x-rays rather than advanced imaging, although there are a considerable number. So, again, it's a choice.
Right.
You know, we try to balance it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Burnett. Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so I have a two-part question, and I'm going to ask it of each of you because I think we may have all eight people here today. So if you're still out in the audience, I'll ask the first four, and then if you don't mind standing and responding. If you don't wish to respond, you do not have to respond, all right? My first part of the question is, which option do you feel is the best? Number two, the second part of the question is, do you feel we need to start a process now to go out for an RFP or, you know, any RFI or an ITN? And if you don't feel comfortable answering that, you don't have to answer, okay? But that's, I mean, I'm asking you because you're the people on the committee. You talk to the people that represent your groups at all times, and I just need to know where you stand on this before I can make a decision. Mr. Darby.
I voted for option one, which was the plan design changes that we recommended, with the caveats. And the reason for that is, if we choose option one recommendations with the caveats, then that includes the 3% investment that Florida Healthcare is going to make of the $1.8 million, which will impact employees the least amount on their premiums. Admittedly, it does lock us into no RFP, but my experience with RFPs thus far have been that it is very difficult, to Mr. Colon's point, for other carriers to compete, but our goal is not to necessarily alter our plan design to the point that we make it affordable for the employee to pay for the design, but we make it less than affordable for them to use the design. So we don't want to flip the model where we get to the point where, yes, we increase our deductibles and our out-of-pocket and everything so much that we necessarily come in line with some other organization somewhere on every item. Because what we'll do then is we will simply drive people, yes, they'll be able to pay for their insurance, but they won't be able to use their insurance. So we are trying to strike that balance. I voted for plan one with the caveats because it would increase the premiums, the impact on the employee, which is what they told us in the survey, would be the least amount. And we chose those areas, as I emphasized a moment ago, the areas to make those changes based upon the least impact to the vast majority of members who are enrolled in the plan in the district.
Okay, and so the second part, you want to go out for RFP or you don't?
At this point, the best option I feel is to take the 6.5 cap and the 3% reduction and not go out to RFP. If the board were to decide that they wanted to go out to RFP and would rather have the same plan design or whatever plan design you choose, but the same plan design, what's in the deck, but go to 4.2% increase, And if the board, as you indicated, were willing to look at the contribution in order to negate the impact of that to the employee, to the point that it would be acceptable from the premium increase from the employee perspective, then I have no problem going out for an RFP.
Okay.
I'm not saying that I'm standing up saying John Darby is looking for an RFP. Okay. I enjoy that so much, but I'm more than happy to do that. But I think it would be incumbent upon the board to decide if we want to maintain that option. Option three, I'm sorry. Okay, I messed up my numbers. So option three,
okay,
the official option. I was thinking of them as option with one and option two not. So option three is the 4.2, correct, Beth? All right. So generally speaking, with the caveat, if the board is willing to look at the contribution in order to minimize the impact to the employee in order to maintain the opportunity to go to an RFP, I would fully support you in that. But I think the best option that's on the table right now, leaving everything as is, since we're in the middle of getting everything done, is to go with the no RFP and the cap.
Okay, so actually option three is what you're for.
Option three, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was thinking of them as our first option would be with it and our second option would be without.
Dr. Powell.
I'm my first round on the insurance committee, but I ask a lot of questions. So I talk to the employees because I'm a people person, and I'm standing with my sister over here, and I did much prayer with this because when you're talking to people, and people are saying they'll raise our insurance but won't give us a raise, that's the first thing I looked at. Is you have people that aren't making what, let's say they would pay a Bucky's employee right now, and that's starting at $15 an hour. I'm talking about your support workers. So asking the questions, I asked over 40 support workers along with over 22 instructional workers, and they're like, I'm paying more money out of my pocket than I'm getting in my paycheck. So for me, as a family man, looking at that, I have smaller children. I have a special needs child. So, of course, he's covered differently than what I would be. But when I can look out at marketplace insurance and I can pay less for an entire family than what the district has given me, something's wrong.
Okay.
And I stand with John because I went with option three. And the reason why is because we as a cohesive unit, we probably all got a little hot under the collar, but we stood together as a cohesive unit. And I came into the insurance committee meeting the same way I am now, that I talk to people, I investigate this. Because if you take, let's say, over in the district where I'm at, let's say you've got 99% poverty level, and you have employees that live in that area, that they can't afford to go to the White House without their house, if you follow me.
Mm-hmm.
It's some things that people can do out of their pockets, and it's some things they can't do out of their pocket. And one of the biggest things, Ms. Burnett, one of the biggest things that have been said is that we're paying more money out of our paycheck than what we're getting in a raise. And I'm agreeing with my friend down here because when you look at Schoolway Cafe, they're not. I've worked within that. They're not making that money, and it's very hard on them to go to any hospital and just pay that money out because you're saying, hey, do I buy my kid some grocery, or do I go to the hospital, or do I just lay here and die?
Thank you, Dr. Powell. Nicole Miller.
I'm not sure if I can follow that.
No, but he's right. What he said is right. It is true because 30 years of my career with Volusia County has been with Student Transportation Services. Most of it is non-bargaining. I manage the ASME employees, and I've had them come to me several times, and I've had to literally give them money for their light bill or their water bill. And my dad always taught me, you don't give out what you expect to get back because you may not get it back.
Right.
And we do that. So when you're looking at this, you have to think of those people and what they're having to go through. And some of them that have to have insurance on a whole family and whether or not they can afford it. So when you're looking at the plans and making those decisions, you're thinking of those, of the support personnel. And it's, I feel it's imperative that the second piece of your question, I do feel like we need to go outside and look to see if there's competitors out there that can help our support, but making sure that they are helping us and that we're not going backwards. We need to move forward. So that's where I'm at.
Kathy. I voted for the plan, like what we went with the pieces of the puzzle we put together to make it the most affordable, you know, to the people. And I voted for option one because I don't like being locked in, because I feel like if we're, you know, the largest, you know, their largest person, that they would come to us every year with the best deal that they can give us. And because, like I said, because I'm a business person, when somebody comes to me and wants to lock me into a rate, then it's like to me they got something to hide, you know. And it's like if you're gonna do business with me, you know, on this scale, then you're gonna come to me every year with the best option, and that's why I vote number one.
Okay, so out in the audience, Dr. Raimundo.
What resonated with me were the voices of the people. The survey stuck out to me because those are the voices of our people talking about their, the out-of-pocket costs and what it really, how they're impacted by that. And so I took to heart the survey, especially when they were discussing the hardships that they go through for insurance and being able to pay for it. And yes, those families that don't have that dual income and have to go out, my child or food, what do I make, which decision? And with that being said, I'm going to tell you I voted for number three because I felt that that was the best. We did, around that table, to echo what Mr. Darby said. We do take it very seriously. We look at every single aspect. We think about our parties, view, ask, me, non-bargaining, collectively. And we think about the people that we represent. And the decisions are not made lightly. Sometimes they're very heated, contentious discussions, but always in the best interest of our people. And with that, option three was the best decision, and that's why I voted for that one. Now, if you decide with the second part that you feel we should go out and negotiate and have other companies come in and be as competitive as possible, I'm in agreement with that as well. But for now, option three is where I stand.
Thank you. Carol Sawyer. And if the other two are here, Marlo and Maureen, and you want to make your way forward, you'll be next. Carol.
Thank you. I've been on the committee for about 6 or 7 years now, and I voted for option one. But it's not just a Florida healthcare problem or issue. We know healthcare is out of control nationally. But it's a school board contribution also. Many years ago, I asked, can we have different prices for different pay scales. Mm-hmm. People that make up to 30,000, why can't the board pay 600? People that make from 30 to 60, why can't the board pay 550 and then 500 for the top half? This is what needs to be done. The people complain every time we get a raise, the health insurance takes it. Health insurance is out of control. And when I am on the committee and we're throwing things back and forth, especially John and I, over the years, I look at the deductibles. I look at the HMO because I feel that's where most of the Ask Me people are, in the HMO. I look at the deductible to go to a doctor or a specialist. Keep it low. Those are the people that need to go to the doctor throughout the year. That's where they go. If the hospital has to get raised a little bit, it has to get raised a little. The hospital's going to take payments from people. This is how I look at things, and that's a little ridiculous, but you have to pick out your priorities and what is better for the group that you represent. It's the board needs to pay more for the lower half of the people on the pay scale, And I voted for option one so that we can go out for an RFP. The other thing is, when we go out for an RFP, we tell them to match our plan. You can't do that. You let them come in with a plan that they can give to us. Okay, if you're trying to match our plan, nobody's going to be able to do that and give us the prices that we have. And I love Florida healthcare. I love the workforce wellness. Our people use it all the time. For $8, you can go see a doctor if you're sick or if something happens to one of your kids. You just walk into the clinic. You don't need anything. And they have clinics all over the county. So Florida healthcare is good. I'm not putting them down. We have a good plan. They have good options for us. But it's the board contribution also, and there we go from there. Thank you.
Marlo.
Hello. I voted for plan number three for a lot of the same reasons that John has put forward. The other thing is I've been on the insurance committee for about 5 or 6 years now, and so I've been through several renewals. And I know that I don't necessarily like to be locked into things, but when I look at data, the 6.5%, when you look at our trends, seems to be maybe not such a bad thing, and I don't know if we're going to be able to match that. However, as you said, and everyone else has said with the RFP, if that's what you decide, and I think Carol made a very good point about the fact, instead of saying, hey, can you match this, it might be a better way to say, what can you give us? Because nobody's going to be able to match what Florida Healthcare can give us. Nobody has those standalone clinics. And Florida Healthcare is very much aware that we are one of their biggest clienteles. And so sometimes putting the competition out there is not a bad thing. However, when I've looked at the data and when the people that I've talked to tell me they want to keep more in their check, you know, they're tired of when they get a raise, they end up behind because now they're paying more for their insurance than what their raise was. And so that's why I chose option three, was because it kept more money in the pockets of the employees. Thank you.
Thank you. Maureen.
Good afternoon, or good morning. What time is it? Yep, still morning. I also went with option three with the condition for the cap, the 6.5. That's conditional for the 22-23 school year, which leaves us open to go out for bid for the 23-24 year. Also knowing that we're going to push educating the lower income of our members or the employees to utilize those $8 clinics and bring down hopefully some more of our emergency and hospitalization costs throughout the year, which may affect that 6.5 as it written in stone. Hopefully it'll come back lower for the following school year. So I am all new to this. I'm learning as we go along with all the meetings. With all the others' expertise and with the survey that came back, that people really do want more in their paycheck and less taken out. So I went with the three, option three.
Thank you. So I've said this before. What's heartbreaking to me, I mean, ideally insurance as we know it, because I've talked to people even outside of what, you know, they brought it forward, you know, that are not county employees, you know, people that are just employed by businesses and things like that. And to some degree, insurance is out of control, you know, and the prices continued up. I appreciate the eight of you here today and all of the work you've done, because you are doing a great job of representing your groups. But, you know, years ago when I had a paraprofessional, and as I said, she had to write a check each month and drop it off here at DAC to cover the cost of her insurance at her paycheck, knowing that her entire paycheck was going to pay insurance. I mean, that's hard, because we've got people in this room sitting here making minimum wage today with us, all the way up to what the superintendent is making. And there is a difference. I mean, I myself remember, you know, when the insurance took a spike, and I was a single mom with two kids having to cover that, And yes, I still had part of my paycheck left, but I'll tell you, it was a hard decision to know when do I take them, you know, other than a well check, when do I take them to the doctor and what am I going to have to pay out of my pocket? You know, I'm appreciative at times that hospitals would do payment plans. I know what these people are going through. And we lose sight sometimes. And the bottom line is we couldn't do our job without them. We need our paras. We need our school cafe. We need our bus drivers. We need our bus assistants. We need all of those people, or this organization doesn't run. Because it doesn't just run on the district staff, nor does it just run on the teachers, okay? It takes every one of those individuals. And we're pricing them at times out. And, you know, those of you sitting here, I appreciate all the work you've done too, but none of you that I know of have walked the walk that those people have to walk. And what they have to do when they decide, do I have my medicine or do I buy groceries? And we've got people in this country that's where they're sitting at. And, you know, I understand, I believe you must be the gentleman from Florida Healthcare. Am I right or wrong?
Yes.
But here's the thing. We're probably your largest group sitting here in Volusia County. And when we first got on for a Teams meeting, please don't take this wrong, I said, you're working for us to help us get a better pricing. And I wouldn't accept the first round. I said to the superintendent, you know, what's Aon doing if this is what they come back with? And so I know you went back and came back with a better price. But had we not asked for a better price, would that have come back as a better price? And I'm looking at you, sir, because the bottom line is, if you've gotten nothing out of what you've heard today, Only the VIEW group here, which was Marlo and John, represent the instructional teacher group, okay? Which, listen, I know teachers want to say, look where we're at, but teachers are not below poverty wages at this time, okay? But when we look at our VIEW group and we look at our AFSCME group, they're below poverty wages. On our non-bargaining, it's a toss-up because it depends on who it is on non-bargaining. If it's a USA-1, there's a possibility they're below poverty wages or right there on that cusp. But if it's a district administrator, they're not below poverty wages, okay? So, sir, I don't take it lightly when you try to lock us in and say, if you go back out, we're going to charge you. I don't like those tactics, I'll be honest with you. I understand that you're like you're giving us a good deal or whatever. I don't like it when I have to be the one, and I don't know if I was the only one, that asked that you go back out and get us a better deal. All right? The best deal needs to come in straight away if you want to keep our business, because we've got employees that are hurting right now. And I'm probably the one on the board that makes, I walked away and took a huge pay cut to do this job, okay? But I still have to have insurance. I don't know where everybody else stands, but I think everybody else is probably in a little bit better spot than I am. But I feel for all of you out there, and we can't do this without them. And I don't need people to make decisions between medicine or food. And I don't need people to make decisions between do they get care for a family member or do they let something go, because the longer they let it go, the more it's going to cost. And it's just not a good thing. So I appreciate the 8 of you coming today. I appreciate you being honest and telling me where you stand, because you didn't have to do that and tell me what you thought we should or should not do. I'm going to turn this back over to Ms. Cuthbert at this time, because I'm struggling with this. I mean, thank you, you know, but in the long run, and I do think if we go out for an RFP, we can't give them, here's what our current plan is. I think we do need to see what people have out there. And maybe there isn't anything better, but we'll never know if we don't ask.
Thank you very much. My question.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question? Of
very, very quickly. I would like to ask mine as well. Go ahead.
Of this, well, I thought we would go in rounds. So
well, I'm also looking at the clock.
I understand that.
Okay.
So
go ahead, sir.
I would like to ask the CEO a question if he's willing to come up.
Yes, sir.
How are you this year? Thank you this morning. Thank you for coming. So you've heard me say oftentimes that, you know, the issue isn't so much what you're offering per se versus what we're asking you to do as a business and how that what we're asking for is very difficult to do at an affordable rate, which I think we've brought that up quite a bit and you've heard it firsthand. What are your thoughts as it relates to what we're asking for in our RFP? You know, do you all as an organization feel that these are reasonable asks? Are you all, you know, what's your thought on plan design as to RFP versus where we are today?
Well, I guess I would say in terms of the ask on the RFP, we can actually price any plan that you want. We can price a plan that looks like the county. We can price a plan that looks like anything else. And it all comes down to the balance between cost share, which is the employees, what they participate with, versus the premium. And so when the cost share gets reduced, the premium goes up. I think that we do everything that we can at Florida Healthcare to try to control those costs and to maintain the premium with the things that we do with the pharmacy and the formulary and our clinics and the $8 visits. We'd rather have somebody come in for an $8 visit and get identified and cared for, you know, at the front end versus having, you know, a catastrophic issue because they couldn't come into the clinic and see a doctor. I would like to take just 1 minute, if you don't mind, so I can explain why option three is the way it is. If we could have supported actuarially reducing the rate by another 3%, we would have done that. There would have been no caveats. But the rate that we had on the table was as low as what the actuaries were able to support. So I made a business decision to try to help the school board by giving an additional 3%, which couldn't be supported by our actuaries, as an investment to the organization. And then the reason I put a 6.5% cap on the following year was I wanted to prove to you that we weren't going to try to claw that back in the renewal. We were going to hold ourselves to the 6.5% or less, you know, going forward. And the other thing that I would like to do, letting you know that we care about the community, we compare about the school board, is back when COVID hit last year in the early spring, we saw claims expenses go down significantly in April, May, and yet premium didn't go down. And so we made what we consider to be the moral decision, well, we need to do something for our groups. And in this case, it was all of our groups across Volusia County and other areas. We decided to give a premium refund, and so that amounted to $702,000 that we wrote a check back in July of last year to the school board because we couldn't in good conscience keep that premium when we weren't spending it on claims. So we are with you. And healthcare costs are through the roof. It's we're trying to do our best, you know, contractually and by managing the care as best we can to stay where we are. But to your point, we can offer whatever you want in the way of benefits, but there's a cost shift between what's in premium and what's in cost share, and we certainly can do that. But so if you went out for RFP, we could respond to any benefit design that you wanted to, and I think you try to do that across the board equally for anybody who's responding to the RFP, so everybody's giving you an apples-to-apples comparison, and then you kind of adjust from there. But That's kind of what I wanted to share with the group.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate you coming this morning. Much of what I wanted to ask is what Ms. Haynes asked about why one voted for one and one voted for three, because they were so different. The slide 7 and 8 gives us descriptions on option 3, correct? Want to make sure that everyone is clear where to find that information. Slides 7 and 8 have to do with option 3.
That's correct.
Okay, where is option 1 specified?
Oh, it would be...
What slides? Okay. So that's what, 26?
That's without the caveat. That would be without the caveat.
25 and 26.
As John had mentioned, would go up.
Okay. I just want that to be very clear for the board in the presentation and also the public when they view this online. Ms. Sawyer hit a really good point about a graduated rate for certain incomes. A lot of it has to do with our with the school district's contribution, and that's something I'm sure we will discuss at one point or another. I too am I'm a retired teacher. I remember paying $5 a month, but that was a long, long, long time ago. I mean, that was a very long time ago. And then, of course, I remember, I think at the height, it was $96 a month, and it was split family. I was a single mother when I came here with two children, and I was able to get health care, but it was a chunk out of my small salary, because in 1986, I was making, with 3 years' experience, $17,000 a year. So times have changed. Our wages have not increased all that much. We are still fighting with state legislature to have appropriate funding in order to raise wages and also to compete with our neighboring counties. I think it's very important that people understand you have a board, and from hearing from my colleagues, we care very much. And you have three members on the board who are previous Volusia County School employees who worked in different parts. I was in the classroom. Ms. Haynes was in the classroom and in the district. Mr. Persis was in the classroom a very short period of time, because when I came in 86, he was already a principal. So we have viewpoints from different points, and it's a nice viewpoint. So I am very appreciative of the time our committee and the varied explanations. You were very open and honest in how you viewed it, that I took copious notes to make sure that we too think about what your points of view are. We have to very much recognize the different pay scales in which our employees pay their insurance rates. It's an excellent point. I'm very impressed with the clinics, Florida Healthcare. My husband had Florida Healthcare. I had Florida Blue for a long time. But the clinics were always excellent, and to be able to see a doctor for $8 is absolutely remarkable. I do hear from retirees, and they say, well, when I go to my North Carolina summer home, where's Florida Healthcare for me? So that, too, we have to pay attention to the healthcare. If someone retires at age 50 as opposed to 60, what kind of healthcare? Because I remember retiring, and half of my Florida retirement system went straight to healthcare. So it just doesn't affect us here and now. It will affect us once we retire as well. So those are all the factors that we must consider. We will be doing that. We also would like to have, if the unions could do another survey for us, I think it would be nice to hear the latest information, especially if you could tell us their income. Is it between 15 and 35? Is it between 35 and 50? That would help us as well to see. And we would like to have as many people to participate in that survey as possible. So I just want to say thank you all for coming this morning. We wanted to make sure we had a full, robust discussion in detail, and each of us were able to ask the questions we needed to. I can't get over how open and honest all of you were in the audience, so thank you very much. Dr. Fritz?
I'd like to also thank the committee, and I'd like to thank district staff and AON for being here, but we do need to have some direction from the board about where to go today. This is scheduled for approval on the May 25th board meeting, so we do have to have some direction. based on everything that you've heard.
Okay, I would then like to ask each of the board members, because I would like to conclude before noon if possible, so we can go on to our next discussion, and we'll need a small break too. What your thoughts are, what do you think?
I realize briefly. We can't vote, but you just
yes,
wanna,
I just
want to
know where you're coming
where
from, so the district
yeah.
can
we just have
understand.
To sure. prepare for the
yeah,
25th.
I support the insurance committee's recommendation.
Okay. Mr.
Cologne. So the insurance committee, what we heard today was the reason they chose option three without the RFP is because that new rate would be tacked on to the employee. But if we could go out for RFP, they would support that. And so I think that based on, and if I am wrong, please let me, somebody correct me, but what the decision they made was based on the fact that they would have to pay any differences in not going out for RFP. So they each said, I chose this because it would have the less impact, meaning if we could absorb that impact, then the question could then go back, and I don't know what that impact would be for us to absorb. Do we know that number?
Not total overall, I don't at this point. But
because, again, they were afraid that if they didn't pick the option that wouldn't lock us in, it would be passed on to them versus us absorbing that as we go forth. So I still need more information on that because, each of them said this is the reason why. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Burnett.
I'm going to agree with Mr. Cologne on that, and that we need more information to see what we can contribute as a board, if there is a way to make it a sliding scale, and if we can make it to where we can absorb that so that we could go out to RFP next year. I think that would be important. Mm-hmm.
So you're leaning more to option one along with Mr. Cologne?
With more information and our discussion on what we can, you know, I don't know if we have another discussion before with the workshop or how we can, when we're planning to address what our contribution is going to be.
I just need to clarify, are you saying option one? And was that what you were saying, or were you saying you want more information?
Well, option one would mean that there's going to be a rate increase, which is what they did not want to their,
correct,
to our employees. And so what is that number? What would that cost us to absorb and not pass it on to the employee, yet still go out for RFP or have that option available?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm sure as soon as that information can come to us, Dr. Fitz, would you be able to talk to us individually?
I think potentially we could, but we may have to put this off on the 25th. In other words, if we can't get everything that you want, it sounds like you're wanting surveys, it sounds like you're wanting to do more study. If you're wanting to do more study, then we're not going to be ready on the 25th.
I think we need to have a number on what the impact is.
That's fine by me. Yeah. I'm just telling you that timeline. Beth, let me ask you. You're the expert. If getting based on what they're wanting, are we still able to make that 25th, or would we have to go?
Yes, we can do it. If we go into June, we've done it in the past.
But we could either do the 25th or we would go into June. Is that what you're saying?
Right. We can go into June. Okay. If the board's needing more information, we'd rather provide it in a timely manner so they can make a wise decision. I just we get cautiously close when it comes to enrollment because it's in August.
Okay. Well, then how about if we suggest just to have the deadline the first meeting in June? We prefer the 25th, but we would prefer accuracy. And then us to be able to talk individually, you know, if we're out of the sunshine, yes, is to be talked individually with the superintendent. So then we can get some idea of where we are, and then we can vote on the 25th.
Absolutely. Okay. That's fine.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so the questions that came to mind, especially after hearing from the committee members today, that I have for you, Dr. Fritz, I believe some of this information we may be able to gather here, you know, because Beth and her team know, like, who takes what insurance and things like that. But ultimately, my first question would be, I'd like to know the number of employees that fall into each of the categories. And I think that information could be gathered in-house. So how many people are we talking about under AFSCME? How many people are we talking about under what was VESA? The non-bargaining, and I'd like the non-bargaining broken into possibly the same way that we looked at it when we were going ahead and putting out the raises. We took the lower non-bargaining individuals, which those were some of the USA one, you know, like if they were below a certain pay scale or category, we took, I'd like to know the number that falls into that versus the number that falls into the higher pay on the non-bargaining. I need to see numbers of employees that we have in those categories because Carol, you know, and whoever else mentioned it, I think it may have been Kathy, you know, or even Dr. Powell, the question is there, you know, like if we only have, you know, 102 employees that fall into that category, well, what does it look like to possibly do a sliding scale piece for them? Because they are below poverty wages. I mean, we have to be honest and say we've got employees that are below poverty wages here. And what are we doing as an impact for them? Because I know that we did something different on the dental piece, you know, for those people that were in those categories. So I'd like to see what the numbers look like. Mrs. Cuthbert, I know that time is of the essence, and I know that our calendars are pretty heavy, but I almost wouldn't mind if we went back into an executive session so that, like, the superintendent doesn't have to tie up everybody speaking to each of us five times, and that would allow me in the executive session to hear, you know, where everybody else stands on this. And nothing against a survey, but your survey was short, and I did hear that it was confusing. You know, if we're going to go back a survey route, which I'm not necessarily saying because surveys seem to get us in trouble because they're not clear. You know, my question, I would have asked questions like, you know, are you the sole provider of your household? And if so, what's your income range fall in? Are you only insuring yourself? Are you insuring yourself and, you know, children? You know, just we really need to know our employees and know where they're coming from. Because as I said, lots of times we just look through the lens of ourselves and think everybody else is sitting like us and they're not. And we forget. And so, you know, I appreciate at this time, though, I mean, I'm not going to go against what the committee recommended because they've done all of this work and we're just coming into it. But I think I just need to see numbers.
We can get that.
Huh?
We can get that.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's where I stand. And it's your choice on whether or not we go into an executive session.
I was going to suggest that because, you know, May is very rough on all of us with all the celebrations that we have. It's very important that we get as much accurate information as possible so we can make the best decision for our employee group. In the past, I've always voted for the committee recommendation. I always have. I, too, support the committee recommendation, but the caveat concerns me. It's like it's a nagging piece in the back of my head. Florida Healthcare has always been there for us. They've always done it, but it's also I do believe during our, didn't we have an audit?
Yeah.
And they criticized.
Inspector General.
Yes, they criticized us because we were with a hospital, a healthcare plan far too long.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be nice to see on a competitive level how good, and it's a way to look at it differently, how good Florida Healthcare is really doing for us. Because then that way we have an outside group to say, well, sorry, we can't do this for you. We can't do this for you. But yet, Florida Healthcare can. But it would be nice because not with knowledge comes power, and it's we want to be an educated group. So I strongly suggest that we get this accurate information based on all of your parts. This has been, I think, the best discussion of insurance I've ever seen. This is my seventh year on the board, so I very appreciate it, especially, sir, representing Florida Healthcare. Thank you so much. It was very brave of you and very much, I mean, I thought it was wonderful you came. So we value your input and we value your business. And Aon, thank you so much for meeting with our people every time. And I like the diversity and the honest reports back. So thank you so very much. If that's okay, Dr. Fritz, I'm going to have a 10-minute, I'm going to adjourn for 10 minutes to have a little break so we can all get up and stretch our legs. Come back. We've just returning from about a 12-minute break. We are now proceeding to 3.01, our face mask discussion. Dr. Fritz.
I don't see Mr. Penley in the audience. Is he there yet? Yep. Please, thank you, Patty. Board members, while we're waiting for Ms. Penley, the discussion today will be about a revision of the current mask policy, Policy 503. Mr. Penley will go over the language for that policy. At that point, we'll be able to have discussion as a board, and you can provide some further guidance and direction. You know, I started my career wanting to be an attorney. At this point, that would have been a good thing for me. Yes, it's way too late.
Everybody have a copy of the revisions? Now, the thing we're not supposed to do is when he does come in, we're not supposed to yell, surprise.
I think he deserves it. Go ahead. And that concludes our workshop on mask.
Apologies, Madam Chair.
That's okay. We heard you were getting ice cream for everybody.
let's see. Here we go. Okay.
Okay, we're at 3.01, face mask discussion. And Dr. Fritz has welcomed you already, so we'll just, it's your show, sir.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, board members. I won't rehearse all of the history of our face covering policy, but as you will recall from the previous board meeting, the consensus of the board was to bring forward today for discussion and later on a consideration of amendments to policy 503 as it concerns face coverings in the district. The draft that you have before you addresses that by making face coverings voluntary. It strikes the language concerning mandatory. It does include provision that students, employees, and visitors would be encouraged to follow CDC guidelines consistent with the Senate Bill 72 language for affirmative defenses to COVID-19 litigation. It includes a paragraph that the superintendent will timely notify the school board of any significant escalation or emergency requiring reconsideration of the policy. It retains the definitions of face coverings to include, as we had in the previous version of policy 503, cloth face coverings, commercially produced masks, and face shields. In order to address the consensus concerns about novelty mask, Halloween mask, that sort of thing, I did include a definition that only face coverings that it were intended for health and safety purposes may be worn. I believe that that would address the concerns in that regard. Of course, with a permissive face covering policy, you no longer need the exceptions. Those were stricken. We did retain the district's responsibility for maintaining a supply of personal protective equipment for those who choose to wear them. And then the final provision of the revision suggested is that the policy become effective July 1st, 2021, consistent with what the governor's executive orders deadlines were. So with that, if there are any questions concerning those provisions, I would also note for the board members that I was able to communicate with 16 other of my colleagues around the state, just in terms of where other districts were. Almost all of them that have a mask policy and are making considerations with a short handful are continuing, it appears, to maintain face covering policies mandatory for this school year. Several of them, including Seminole and Indian River, are considering whether that policy change is made effective for summer school, extended school year programs after the close of school to students on June the 9th. Both of those districts, I understand, are making their determinations today in that regard. But most others, except with the one exception of Pinellas, who has already indicated that they are repealing their mandatory face covering policy effective at 5 p.m. on June the 9th. Everyone else is in some state of consideration. Madam Chair, those are my remarks.
Thank you very much, sir. Are you going to stay with us for the board questions?
Of course.
Okay, excellent. It's a true bulldog.
Having shown up late, I felt like I owed you the duty.
Thank you. Ms. Burnett, would you like to begin our discussion? Okay, no, that's no problem. I perfectly understand. I just thought I'd give you the opportunity. I see Carl over there in my vision. So, yes, Mr. Person. Pardon, sir?
I will go first if nobody wants
to. No, that's fine. Please okay. Do. Yeah, go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Penley. I have like two changes I would like for the board to think about. The first one on the proposed policy change is in paragraph A, where it is the underlined statement there, Madam Chair, begins with all students.
Paragraph.
All students.
Yes,
and it,
yes.
It
three lines
references following the CDC guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am proposing is to substitute CDC reference to language that's in the Florida state statute regarding the liability to entities, so that it would read, and Mr. Penley, you are familiar with the statute I'm referring to.
I have it here before us if you want me to read it.
Well, look at that. Okay. So it would read something like this: all students, employees, visitors, vendors, or any other persons to make a good faith effort to substantially comply with authoritative or controlling government issued health standards or guidance while in or on school board property. Did I capture the statute?
You did. That's exactly what is stated in the affirmative defense provision of Senate Bill 72 to be codified and enrolled and signed. But let me just give you this language here from paragraph 2B that says, if the court determines that the defendant made such a good faith effort that you're talking about, the defendant is immune from civil liability. if more than one source or set of standards or guidance was authoritative or controlling at the time the cause of action accrued. So that means health department, CDC, World Health Organization, NIH, all of those agencies. The defendant's good faith effort to substantially comply with any one of those sources or sets of standards or guidance confers such immunity from civil liability. So it's certainly appropriate to have mention of any one of those sources or sets of standards. We chose CDC because that's what was in the original version of 503. I think that we could work around the language that you suggest from paragraph 2, making a good faith effort to substantially comply with any one of the sources or sets of guidance.
Yeah.
Words to that effect.
Yeah, and the reason why I like that language is it doesn't identify, you know, you don't have to say World Health Organization, CD, you don't have to name them in our policy, just use the same language that's in the state statute, which just broadens it and I think provides a lot more protection, if you will, for the district, because even though, you know, somebody could file a suit against the school, the district, for COVID-related instance, it would be very hard to prove that case, very, very hard. However, even when people come up with frivolous lawsuits, we have to defend them. And that costs money. And so I think if we have this language in there, it may serve to prevent some of those frivolous lawsuits from taking place. That is the one thing, and I just kind of want, I don't know, Superintendent Fritz, if you're good with
absolutely fine with that. Yep.
Okay. And the second one regarding...
Go ahead. Before you go, may I ask a question?
Oh, yeah. And ask it to the lawyer.
Okay. Now, this is what's going through my head. Because of what he just said, it does not preclude CDC guidelines, correct?
No, ma'am.
It broadens it. Okay. So if somebody says, well, the Center for Disease Control, you know, the CDC's not mentioned, so therefore it doesn't matter what they say, do we have to then explain it, or do we have to put kind of some kind of caveat in parentheses under that, what all that means?
Well, I think that the nature of the legislation was such that it's incumbent upon a defendant in a lawsuit alleging violation or damages as a result of contracting COVID-19 that the defendant show that they, in good faith, substantially complied with any one of those standards. So you're not limited, the Senate's purpose in drafting this and is adopted by the legislature was to broaden not just CDC, but to allow World Health Organization, Health Department, State Surgeon General, Federal Surgeon General, whoever you're relying on, as long as you are showing as a defendant at the motion to dismiss stage, so at the initial pleading stage of litigation, if you can come in as a defendant and say, we were following or attempting in good faith to follow any one of those standards, you're good.
Okay. It's just I don't want the person right to come in and say, oh, you know, CDC's not in there. Because this is such a hot issue. We have a difference between what's law or state statute, what's political, and what's scientific. I just want to make sure that when we have the sentence next under it, superintendent shall timely notify the school board of any significant escalation or emergency requiring reconsideration of this policy, I would want our superintendent to have the backing to make that decision or suggest that we go into an emergency order. Because who knows, that's what our discussion was at the last board meeting. We want to be able to have that caveat just in case, because we had no idea we would be here in this situation this month, let alone, even 8 months ago.
So that is not in jeopardy. So you're saying he has more flexibility in the law, but it does not, we can still follow the science.
The defendant in a lawsuit would have more flexibility under the statute for immunity from a lawsuit if it followed in good faith any one of those standards.
Okay.
We're the defendant.
Okay, I understand. Are there any more questions to what Mr. Persis has suggested?
So I do have one. And so I would caution, because the reality is that making this mask optional goes against CDC guidelines, goes against World Health, goes against the Florida Department of Health, goes against the local Volusia County Health Department. So we are going against all of those folks. And so right now the community spread is 6.66 for the last 14 days. So if you tie yourself to say that we are going to, you know, we're saying we encourage folks to follow. So this is really just actually for other people, but we are, you know, we are going against state, local, and federal guidance in making this a mask optional policy right now. Now, we can choose to do that, but I'd be cautious to add that language, knowing that all of those entities currently have the position that masks should be a mitigating. So again, we can do this, and it's been the consensus of the board to do that. But again, if you put that language in there, you're going to be held to that. And right now, we are going against every single one of them. That's
now,
Mr. Persis.
No, well, I would like to let Mr. Fenley address that, because right now, in the current language, it's like if the person doesn't follow, if you don't follow CDC guidelines, everything else is wrong. And while the World Health may do that and CDC may do this, and who knows how CDC is going to change in the next week, they change every week.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the state's Surgeon General not following, not saying that the CDC guidelines are the right way to go. And you have a governor saying that too. So we have people at the top of our state level but saying different things than the CDC.
Correct.
That's why I think, Ruben, I think it'd be better to broaden it so that if someone came to us and said, well, they weren't following CDC guidelines. Well, maybe we weren't, but we were following the state Surgeon General's guidelines.
And I think
that would cover us.
And that may be safer to say, the state authorities versus getting into, because the reality is that the Surgeon General is not the local health department,
right,
although he oversees the local health department. And so, you know, if the idea is that we're going to follow the, you know, guidance of the Florida Department of Education, then, you know, that's one thing. But I'm afraid, you know, again, if we were held to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ted, but if we were held to say, did you follow, whose guidelines did you follow by making masks optional, I don't know that there's any group right now that would support that. Is there? I mean, I don't know. Does anybody know of a group that's a local, federal, or state clinical, because even on that policy, if you look at the definition, and Carl, it's in the definition of that one. Go ahead and read. You have it in front of you. What's the definition of what they called a state, federal? It's at the end.
I don't have the entire.
You don't have the last pages.
No. It does mention authoritative or controlling government issued health standards.
Right.
So it's the government issued piece. It doesn't specify state or federal government. There are, you know, any number of ways to analyze that line in the statute, but I don't think that it's a mistake or just coincidental that the Surgeon General of the state of Florida came out with his guidance saying make mask optional last week. I don't think it's coincidental that the Department of Education in its guidance came out with, you know,
And that's fine, but again, if we put anything in there about state or national, we're not following CDC. We're not. And so That's where I just caution, you know, it's...
I think, and I think that's the whole point of my argument, that we don't just say it's CDC or nothing. You know, it's CDC, you got to think of it, is their national organization making policy direction nationally. World Health is worldwide. What we're saying is that we are just, I don't see how we can go wrong mirroring the language that's in state statute. I mean, when it gets down to the law, you're going to fall back on state statute, and that's all that we are saying here. We're not making it more restrictive. We're just saying this is exactly what's in the law.
Mr. Doran would like to speak.
Well, I'm probably going to say what everybody's thinking and nobody's willing to say, but it's pretty clear that the legislature wrote that language for the sole purpose of not singling out the state-controlled Surgeon General Health Department, which was purely a political move on their part, because that language just leaves everybody with the lowest common denominator. All that language says is if you follow whatever, any one of these organizations. Right. So politically, what that really was all about was you can pick the organization that has the least restrictive position. And we already know in advance that the state and the governor have engaged in unprecedented interference and control over the health departments of the state of Florida. And so it was their way of reducing that down to their influence / control organizations on the state level. So, you know, they didn't want to come out and just say that. So, you know, they throw all these other organizations in there, like WHO and CDC and whatnot, but they know none of those are going to ever apply because it's optional, and you're always going to gravitate to the lowest common denominator in that statute. So if your policy is to follow their lead by providing language that allows for the lowest common denominator, then that's good, what you're proposing. If you want to just pick the lowest common denominator, you could just outright say, you know, the state health guidance, whoever that is and where it came from. But I think Mr. Clow makes a good point, and some of these other organizations are in conflict. But again, if you list them all, then at least one of them isn't going to be in conflict. So, right. So you know, do you want to just say it, or do you want to kind of hide behind it all like the legislature did? But the net effect would be the same.
Yeah, I would prefer just to leave it just like the legislature said, and not start naming organizations, you know, and picking and choosing which ones we want and which ones we don't. I think just this covers us pretty well.
Okay, let's hear from others first. Go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
All right. I'm going on record first with Mr. Persis. Thank you for that change in that language. And I thought you said there was one other place you wanted to change language, and I'm sure you'll get to that in a moment. I just want the entire policy rescinded. I have felt this way the whole time. I don't feel that we should be making medical decisions. I believe we are setting ourselves up. If you have, and I think my microphone went away.
Thank you.
That happens occasionally. I believe we should rescind the policy. I don't believe we should make medical decisions. I said last June I thought it should be the individual's choice or parents' choice or staff choice or whatever. We now have UCF that has gone to an optional policy, so that is a large major, you know, university that's right in our area. I have been doing a lot of research on this the last couple weeks. I have been watching where, and we have the parental rights bill coming into play on July 1st. It just needs a signature on it. And it's going to limit us from overstepping bounds into making decisions, especially medically, for children, because that is a parent's right. We are not their parents, okay?
But I've also been looking at what other states are doing, and we're fortunate right now here in Volusia County because no one has filed a lawsuit against us for mandating this and enforcing it. And at the same time, we've not followed the policy that we have. We still have people taking children outside and making them wear masks for PE and recess and to run. When I'm still getting emails about this, and I've been battling these emails all year, and we're now in the 90-some degree heat, there's a problem with that. There's a problem when adults are saying it's okay that they don't wear a mask because we didn't change the adult part of this policy yet because they've been vaccinated, but yet kids have to wear them. I mean, we've got all this stuff going on campuses. You know, it's not okay when a school won't accept a medical exemption, when we have doctor forms and I have to go to Mr. Penley and submit the medical exemptions to him, and then he and you know, one of our assistant soups has to go to battle for why the medical exemptions aren't being set. And then just take that aspect, and they finally say, we'll accept the medical exemption, which we put in the policy that they had to. And then what if the child has an IEP, and now we're breaking the rules for the child's IEP because we put them in the far back corner, and part of their thing is they're supposed to be seated to see the board up front. I mean, this is what's been going on all year. So I go back to this. I'm sitting in this seat to do what's right for kids. Our job is to educate children. In educating them, we are supposed to make the best decisions for those children. We're supposed to be here making sure their IEPs are followed. We're supposed to not put them in health risk situations where they have an asthmatic attack because the PE coach made them wear the face mask outside to run, okay? So I have struggled all year with this because we decided to make a what we call a medical decision on something that I've talked to you guys about going out there, and these are filthy. You'll never convince me that it's okay for a child to be breathing through a filthy mask. That's not healthy. Okay, so I want on record once again, I want the policy rescinded because I don't believe that I have the authority to sit on a school board and make medical decisions that impact children. And, you know, Ruben, with all due respect, when you wanted consequences and discipline for kids, I told you that night when we went around and around about it, I was never going to stand by disciplining a second grader that showed up at the bus without a mask, okay? And I told you our problem was going to be the adults, not the kids. And that's where it lies right now, is we've got adults that are not sometimes doing what's right for kids. And adults aren't following the rules. I mean, I go on campuses, and this, when people start to scurry to put on a mask or to pull it up, I tell them, I'm not the mask police. I'm not here to police them, okay? Carl, I appreciate the language, but I just think we just need to rescind the whole policy and get out of this medical thing, because I think come July 1st, guys, and that parental rights bill signed, we don't have a leg to stand on. And other states are facing the same thing.
Thank you very much, Ms. Haynes. Ms. Burnett?
So if we were to move towards rescinding the policy, how would we allow those who wanted to wear a mask? Because I thought that was part of the issue is the option, and it wasn't included in our dress codes.
We, as a former classroom teacher and working on school campuses, for years I've been in situations where a child going through chemotherapy or has just had a major surgery but is coming back on campus has worn a mask. I never told that child they couldn't wear a medical mask, and it was never in our policy. We've had teachers going through that have come on campus and worn a mask. Nobody's ever told them they can't. My thing is, it just needs to be, I mean, we've had people wearing masks. I'm sure, Carl, when you were a principal, you had somebody come in a medical mask at some point in time. We've never told them they couldn't wear a medical mask. Now, Halloween mask, that's a whole different thing. It doesn't belong on campus.
Okay. And that's why it says medical mask in the policy. Yes, Mr. Colon.
And so, you know, again, for me personally, we're no longer discussing whether to make masks optional or not versus, because it's clear that that's the consensus versus the language. I'll go a step further. So in the state statute, it says, under definition, authoritative guidance means non-binding instructions or recommendations from a federal, state, local governmental entity, a clinical professional organization, or any other authoritative source of clinical guidance. And so if, you know, if it is the intent on the board to, again, not tie ourselves to anybody, then I would rather have no language in there than to put language in there that's going to put us in a position where someone can say, well, tell me whose guidance you followed, state, federal, local, who told you that it was okay to make masks optional? And, you know, Ms. Hain, unlike you, for me, I think we've been put in this position to do what the governor asked us to do, what the commissioner of education have asked us to do. They asked us to work with our local health department, and that's what we did. You know, for me, it hasn't been the personal decision of what I feel is best versus being a constitutional officer and having to follow the guidance that we were given by the governor and by, in writing, in executive orders, saying, work with your local health department. In all my conversations with Jacob Oliva, every single time I tried to poke at him, he said, work with, I mean, it was almost like a bird, work with your local health department. Well, they're telling us something contrary to what you're saying, work with your local health department. Even the day that the announcement was made about the city and county policies, you know, it was 4 o'clock that day. Nothing has changed. We'll put something out later. And so, if we're going to go down this road, I would rather strike the language altogether. Because the truth is, we're going to put ourselves in a position where we're not going to be able to defend ourselves. Because if state, federal, and local folks are saying wear a mask, if you ask the Surgeon General, he's going to say, well, what does your health department say? And, in fact, the governor the very next day was in Miami-Dade County, and what he said was, Miami, of course, he's got, you know, the superintendent from Miami behind him. He said, you know, I understand that Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach had to do what was best for their populace. Well, guess what? That's called working with your local health department. Again, we are defying all of that right now. And so if that is truly the intent or what we want to do, then I say we just get rid of all that language, because the reality is that's going to tie us to a set of guidelines that we are not following.
Okay. I'd like to know, Mr. Penley, what do you think about that? I mean, is that something you would advise the district to do, not to have any of the language?
It is not. I would prefer that you follow the state statute as to substantial compliance with authoritative and controlling governmental issued health standards or guidance. That's okay. What I would okay. Amend this draft to include that language.
I see. Does it harm our local control whatsoever? Because just like the southern part of Florida is having different situations as Volusia County, can we still have that local control if we find ourselves in another precarious position?
Certainly, if you find yourselves in the condition of significant escalation or an emergency,
correct,
that would be incumbent under this policy for the superintendent to bring that back to the board for consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Ms. Haynes.
Okay. So I asked this last time, and to piggyback off what Ms. Cuthbert said, if we were to rescind this policy, though, and we had state or federal come back and say, you're now in a situation, you know, like, say, November, that we're now going to send out guidance enforcing this, then we could go back to an emergency policy, 90-day policy, just like we did when all of this started, correct?
Of course, yes.
So we don't necessarily have to hold on to a policy that has language in it that gives the superintendent, because I don't know what Carl's other statement was he wanted out of there, but
no.
I think I want the whole superintendent statement out of there. Just because I don't see a need, I don't need, people just need to make their own choice. And everybody needs to,
honor whatever choice anyone makes with no bullying, no shaming, no nothing. Like, and I can even tell you in my instance, my choice that I may make personally will be different in different settings. Like, if you're going to put me in a setting with 6,000 people right now, I may put a mask on, all right? But if I'm going to be outdoors and there's only 40 people there, I'm not going to wear a mask, okay? Because you need to breathe fresh air. But we just, so it is true that if we get rid of this policy, if at any time we have to bring it back, it's just we come back as an emergency 90-day policy, right?
7 days, isn't it now, with the change? It says local governments have to meet every 7 days. Didn't they change that as far as emergency policies? I think it's part of the legislation on July 1st because they don't want governments having these long, never-ending. I think it was 7 days.
That's right. I know what you're talking about. Now, there was a limitation on emergency powers that you can only do them for 7 days. And extend it for a period of seven more times, so 49 days total.
Okay, so we go from 90 to 49, and we may have to put it back into...
It would require that you meet then each week to extend your emergency.
That's okay. I'm good with that.
So Madam Chair, in essence, you know, and going back again, you know, believe it or not, I probably agree with Ms. Hain, because the truth is we're going to allow masks to be optional. That's the only part of the policy that's changing. You know, it looks good to have it on paper, but the reality is that even without it, if we're still going to allow the masks, what are we? This is not going to change that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clement. Mr. Persis, you wanted to continue?
Well, sure. If you all are, yeah. The other suggestion, Madam Chair, that I had was in regard to the superintendent statement, and that even though I think it's great that Dr. Fritz wanted to carry that burden and take it away from us, which I think is wonderful, I think it would probably be better if some language was there that said upon the advice or of the Florida State Surgeon General or the Office of the Governor, that the superintendent would notify us. I mean, not so that it doesn't give the impression that Dr. Fritz is making this medical decision, just, you know, I mean, what really qualifies him to do that? So I think if in our policy it would just preface it with something that if the state surgeon general said, you know what, we have a situation and people in Volusia County, you need to all start wearing masks.
So in other words, you're giving him support.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. In other words, he'd have some.
Yeah, I'm not that kind of doctor. So
no,
for sure.
No, that's right. And even though I know that you wouldn't make a decision on a whim, and you would obviously only say that if it did come from a higher medical authority. I just didn't know whether it would be better to have that actually in there, or do we just put our good faith and trust that he would not do that unless he got that. But I just thought if... Just to provide you some protection.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, because you know how people are going to get in the event that, you know, there is another...
Yes, I remember graduation tickets. I got it.
That's great. And just to further it along, Madam Chair, I mean, those are the only two changes that I think might be helpful to this policy here. Following the time frame that we had set up, if we could agree on the language during this workshop, and then later today we vote on it, and that would be the language that would be advertised, right?
Correct.
And then that would be advertised for the 28 days, and then we'd come back in June and then formally approve the policy that would take effect July the 1st. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how we have it set up now. My only thinking along those lines would be, would it be possible for the board to rescind this policy effective after the last day of
Monday,
school?
Monday, June 7th.
Okay. You know, rescind the policy effective June 7th or June 9th or 10th, whatever that Monday is. And then we're still advertising this policy, and then this policy would take effect July the 1st. So basically what I'm, the whole reason for doing that would be so that the students who attend summer school in June would not have to wear masks. And, you know, it would still be optional, of course, but I think it would be better than simply not enforcing a policy that we have in place. And I'm, you know, we could do that too. Just you know, Dr. Fritz could say, if the board, if it were the board's pleasure, Dr. Fritz could tell the principals, you know, if the kids aren't wearing masks, just let it go. But it may be better just to rescind the policy for those 3 weeks, 4 weeks, until this new policy takes effect. I hope I'm making sense.
Yes, you are, Mr. Henley.
It occurs to me that there is a parliamentary procedural problem with that, doing it that way.
Okay.
And I'm not your parliamentarian, Mr. Dorn is, but if I don't believe that you can adopt a rescinded policy, if you understand what I'm saying. Mr. Dorn, do you have an opinion on that?
Well,
if you were to rescind this policy effective immediately.
No, it wouldn't be effective immediately. It would be effective June the.
For summer programs.
Monday, June 7th. Monday, June 7th.
June 7th.
But then you're advertising a rescinded policy. I'm not sure that that's appropriate, but I just have a. I would have to do research on it to tell you from my.
So can we just. Is what I suggested feasible? Can we actually choose a date to rescind it?
Yes, you can.
And if we rescind it, we don't even have to advertise anything, correct?
Correct.
Then you'd have no policy whatsoever.
I'm okay with that, because it's optional.
And then I guess the idea, if I'm hearing it correctly, and I'm kind of just trying to get this in my mind here, so the idea is, if you rescinded the policy altogether, effective whatever date you choose, you're going to have no policy whatsoever for a period of time, with the idea that you're anticipating that a policy proposal that's being advertised would be adopted at some point in the future.
Yeah, and it would take effect July 1st. But what it also does is allows the public to kind of weigh in. I mean, that's the whole purpose of advertising a policy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So the policy is
required that you have a public hearing.
Yeah. And so we have the policy. And
if it's rescinded, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Ms. Burnett.
I apologize.
Whatever.
If it's rescinded, if it's rescinded, do we need to advertise that policy? I mean, what is the point? We could then move forward with changing our dress code if we were worried about a mask optional, and move forward in that manner. Does that make sense? Or?
Yeah, my concern is to protect those, have a policy for those who choose to wear a mask,
right,
who choose the protection. And that's what having an optional policy is all about. You can choose not to wear it, but also let's look at the ones who choose to wear it, so that they will not be bullied. They have some kind of protection, and also this helps us with liability as well. So I tend to agree with Mr. Persis. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So Mr. Penley knows more about this than I do at this point, but if you have no policy whatsoever, what are we flushing that, you know, is going to impact? What are the ramifications of that? I would say this about that. If you're going to have mask optional, it needs to be somewhere in some policy that it is acceptable to wear a medical mask. I hear what Ms. Haynes is saying about, you know, little Johnny here and there popping up with a medical mask, but that's not what we're talking about. And I think there's actually a rule or statute that that prohibits the covering of a face or something like that?
There is a state statute in your dress code policy, the board's dress code policies, that currently is established without this policy, which is more specific, and therefore using statutory construction, you go to the more specific control in the general, right? So, but your general policy is no mask. You can't wear a mask to school. Under your dress code policy, it's prohibited. There's also a state statute that talks about not wearing masks in public above a certain age. I believe it's 8 or 10, somewhere around there. Don't hold me to that. But there are anti-mask statutes and policies already in place. Without this, I think that, to Ms. Haynes' point, we had a policy in place that said not to require mask wearing when outside and where social distancing could be maintained, and we still had trouble with the implementation of that. I think with no policy at all, you're going to have the converse is going to also be a problem. You're going to be getting the calls from the people who say, I want my child to wear a mask, and he's not being allowed to because Mr. Jones or Ms. Smith isn't allowing it in their class. How are we going to address that?
Yeah, which is why I think we still need to have policy. And if we choose, you know, and we really don't have a whole lot legally to stand on, to require mandatory masks, but my problem is we don't know what the future is going to bring. We have no idea. I mean, it scares me what's going on in India, and some people are not being vaccinated. They're choosing not to, and I'm very glad now that, was it Pfizer that has approved 12 to 15-year-olds being vaccinated? Mm-hmm. I do know I have a grandson who's probably going to get vaccinated. Now, and it's very important, but still, that's a choice. That is a choice of parents, and that's good. Parents do have that choice with their minors. But we also have to protect our general population in our schools. We have been, we took an oath to protect and secure and keep our students safe as much as possible. And I think we desperately need this policy in order to protect those who choose not to have that option. I know I will go on campus with a mask until, you know, I think it's safe, but that's my choice, and I would like to have that policy for me to be able to choose that, and for our faculty, our administrators, people who work in the district, because a lot of people sitting out there in our audience go from school to school to school. And that can be very contagious. And so, I mean, we didn't have a flu outbreak this year. I thought it was wonderful. Even our union president, both of them visit schools all the time, and they're with their employees. I think we need that option to wear a mask. And I think that provides it. And then your broadening helps in giving our superintendent more support. I think that makes us, you know, handles the precarious situation as well as helps our students. And if we choose, I mean, just like we did with the uniforms this year, we chose not to, we made that conscious effort not to enforce it because that's the least thing they should be working about with what color shirt they have on. We can choose not to enforce that mask. I mean, we can still have it in effect through July 1st, but it depends upon, we can say that we choose not to. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I don't want to be hypothetical about this, and I know there's a practical side to it, but for the superintendent's sake, I don't like any ideas even being discussed where we're saying we have a policy and we're choosing not to enforce it. We either have a policy or we don't have a policy.
Right.
And the superintendent needs to know what the policy is, and then the superintendent needs to enforce the policy. And, you know, and I understand, you know, I understand completely, having sat here, that when it came to the dress code, we had a lot of, you know, turning a blind eye. I mean, I have a problem with that from a legal standpoint. Mm-hmm. I don't think any blind eye should have ever been turned. I think it should have been enforced right to the nth degree, exactly as it was written, until this board said otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, but I understand some practical effects of this. So if we're going to have no policy whatsoever, that means there's not going to be any ability, or there's not going to be any direction from the board that, or creation of a policy that says it's optional. Therefore, arguably, you put the superintendent in a position with no policy whatsoever to say, you know, the enforcement of this is, as it exists, is that you cannot wear a mask. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to get this thing right. You know,
we thought we had it right, and people haven't followed it.
Before what?
We thought we had it right, and people haven't followed it.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, whatever from right, you know, I think you understand from what I'm saying, if you're getting it right, I, from my perspective, I want the board to establish a policy, and then the superintendent is bound to enforce that. Whatever it is, and if you know, if you want to change it type of thing. But it's it is just a short period of time. But I'm just saying, it's going to be kind of, I don't even want to use the word awkward, because that's not right. I mean, it's going to be basically illegal on some level that we're in this time period where we've got nothing, but then we're going to put in something, but then people are going to do things that are inconsistent with
That's true.
Where we are.
Yes, sir.
I do have one suggestion. Because we have to advertise this, if it is the board's pleasure to go to advertising of any amendments, it has to be advertised for the period of 28 days. But there's nothing that says that once advertised, you cannot make it effective immediately upon adoption by the board. Mm-hmm. That would be at the June 25th meeting at this point. Is that
22nd.
What
22nd.
22nd. So that would get you another
week.
10 days, 2 weeks of time.
Okay. What is the board's pleasure then as we move forward? Do we accept this policy, this revision as written with Mr. Persis's suggestions?
Yes. So going back to Carl's point about the superintendent, I would again caution on that, because right now the health department, who is the voice of the Surgeon General, is telling us we should be wearing masks. And so
that's part of the option.
And so there is a, so if arguably the health department calls Dr. Fritz and says, Dr. Fritz, we are at 9%, we advise you to order masks, he's going to have to do that. Mm-hmm.
If that's what I said, that's not what I meant.
Okay.
It's not the way I understood your proposal.
Okay, so
I have upon the advice, and I put state officials to open it up to
state officials, because again, Ruben, we don't want to get into the health departments, because every health department in every county,
every
they're
county
not
and
consistent.
Health department
right.
is not consistent.
They are not consistent.
Correct.
So it would
they
be
have
better to go from a state authority,
and
the state surgeon general.
That is the state surgeon general.
Well, I mean, from that person, not
they,
through
they just
the health
revoked
department.
All the policies that they had put, all the emergency orders they'd put out there. So if the Surgeon General just revoked all of that on April 29th, and our local health department is still demanding masks and demanding quarantine and all this, like, they're at odds. And that's the thing. How did we get 26 or whatever counties, 22 counties to have no mask mandate to start with, or it was optional from day one if they were listening to their health department? Because every health department seems to be, like, they're all contradicting each other, and that's why I'm still with the thing of, and I hear what you're saying, Ted, and I appreciate what you're saying, but we put a policy in that people haven't followed already, you know, and the group that's been forced to follow it have been the students,
Okay? And the policy, if you read it and you look at all the people that it applied to, students were just one piece of this. There's all these other, you know, entities that were supposed to be that they haven't followed it, or they haven't followed the PE part or the medical exemption part. I mean, we've got all of this stuff. I just go back to this. We're between a rock and a hard place, I truly believe, right now, because we've got a parental rights bill that I don't see any reason why it's not going to be signed, and it goes into place on June 1st. But my biggest issue is this.
July 1st, sorry.
But my biggest issue is this. You, Mr. Colon, Ms. Burnett, myself, Dr. Fritz, were all out the other evening on the ball field at Jackie Robinson. It was hot, okay? And that wasn't at noon. When we've got kids that are out at PE at noon, okay? We were there after 5, sweat pouring off of us, struggling to breathe or speak through these things, becoming dehydrated, and we weren't running. I mean, if you'd have told me I had to run that field that night, I'd have been dead, okay? So my thing of it is, it's just getting hotter outside. And we are going to have summer programs start as soon as the regular school year ends. And so I don't want people out on the fields, whether they're out there for a summer program, they're out there for driver ed, because driver ed rarely goes inside. They're outside the whole time doing this. Or they're out there for band or football or anything else. I don't want to put kids in jeopardy because someone decided, nope, I'm not going to follow the policy, and they're going to wear a mask. And here's what's happening with little people. Sometimes what's being said is, well, I didn't tell them they had to leave it on, but we've already drilled into these 6- and 7-year-olds' heads that they have to wear it. So they don't, unless you physically say to them, I'm sorry, that's the way little people are, you may take it off. Some of them have it on, and so they're like, well, they didn't take it off. Well, 6- and 7-year-olds won't. I mean, think back to when you had your own children and they were that age. They're compliant, they're rule followers, but what are we doing to their health?
Dr. Fritz would like to ask a question of Mr. Penley.
Mr. Penley, I just want to know if this is even anything permissible, because I truly do not know, and something that I thought about as we're sitting up here, and so forgive me if I'm out of line. If the board had a desire to rescind the policy as of June 7th, would they be able to go back and enact, in other words, if they had a desire for the summer, so that students did not have to wear masks during the summertime, or staff, could they go back and enact a voluntary policy for a later date, like 28 days from then, so that would be in July?
Yes, they could.
Okay.
Okay. What about school buses?
Oh, and I know you wrote that to me, but I'm not exactly sure what your question was.
Okay, we're getting into a lot of trouble with political issues and mandates at the federal level, state level, or local level. Because I know Volusia County is still in a state of emergency. They haven't lifted that. Other counties may have. And aren't students supposed to wear masks on buses?
They
is
are.
Is that mandatory?
Yes.
So students get on our school buses in the morning are still going to have to wear the masks, and then they come to school and they can take them off if we rescind it.
Isn't it federal?
No, I thought you meant under our policy. I wouldn't be prepared to speak about
any
of it.
Even if we rescind, I'm sorry, sir. If we rescind our policy, for example, to address what Ms. Haynes has said, would that mean that our students still have to wear a mask on the school bus and then they can get to school and take it off?
I would have to look at that more closely.
Okay.
I'm not prepared.
That's something we would probably need to look at. What about transportation? Okay, yes, sir.
Can I just summarize what I think I'm hearing? Because
yes,
I'm
thank
sure
you.
Everybody's all on the same page.
I'd love a summary.
If we're talking about, I don't like the word rescind, I like repeal. Okay, so rescind implies that it could be void from the beginning. Repeal means that it was good right up to the minute that you chose to take it away. So if we repeal this, if the board chose to repeal the policy effective June 9th, and simultaneously we're pursuing a policy, let's just say completely separate from anything that's going on here, that it provides for the optional wearing of masks that would be effective, according to Mr. Penley, sometime around July 1, if I recall correctly.
As currently drafted.
If they passed it. Right. The policy, if we pursue the advertising of a policy that makes masks optional, 28 days and et cetera, it would be sometime around July 1 when that policy would then become effective?
As currently drafted, the effective date is July 1, assuming that the board chooses to advertise and then adopts that on the 22nd of June.
Okay. So we're looking at June 9th to July 1,
June 7th.
Where we would have absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And then, school is not in session, but there is summer school. And, I can see where, given the history, et cetera, I don't see any legal problem with the superintendent and the district allowing students to come with masks on because they choose to, even though we don't have a policy that says they have that option. But you're only going to have, 3 weeks there where you're just in a no-man's land. And then, assuming you approve the policy July 1, that the practice that will probably occur from June 9th to July 1 will then just be codified by a policy. Does anybody disagree with that? Is that what we're
talking about? It's actually Monday, June 7th, starting.
Oh, June 7th?
Monday, June 7th.
Okay. Well, what happened? Mr. Persis, does that, am I summarizing this correctly, if this is the way it is?
Yeah, and what I thought, Madam Chair, was that between the end of this workshop and the start of the school board meeting, that it'd give Mr. Penley time just to make sure that we can repeal this policy effective June 7th through the end of June, and then while we're advertising a new policy to take effect July 1st, which would make it optional.
Now, those who choose to wear masks, would they be punished?
Right.
Yes.
No, they wouldn't be punished. I mean,
I don't want any kind of repercussions.
No, it would
on
always
those
be optional.
I think it would be
who choose to protect themselves.
It wouldn't be in policy, but it would be the understanding for those 3 weeks that the district, led by the superintendent, would welcome students who, during summer school, who want to wear a mask voluntarily.
Right, and actually we'd only be talking, because summer school doesn't start till the 14th of June.
Yes.
So you're talking 5, 6, 7 school days, because we could make this policy effective, Madam Chair, June 22nd.
Okay, my suggestion is that, to wrap up this meeting, is for, is it okay for Mr. Penley to make those changes for that policy to bring it before the board, where we will vote and discuss more about it. And plus, it'll give us some time to think about the repercussions. We might be able to talk to a few people in the audience individually about that issue, because at that point, at least we have a policy before us that we can adopt or not adopt. But I want that policy at least available for those who would vote for it. Now, I'm not saying you don't have to vote for it or against it, but at least it would be there for us to vote upon.
Is this Cuthbert?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going back to what, when Mr. Cologne wanted discipline in there, and I fought against there being any form of discipline against children if they forgot their mask or whatever. So here's what's interesting. We've had kids bullied. I've shared it. A kid wants to get a drink of water, and they've been yelled at. We've had kids that have had referrals written. I mean, all of this has been against children. And yet we're here to educate children and not to bully children. So I get it. I mean, I like the whole repeal thing, and
I've been from day one. Everybody just make a choice. And had we never even written a policy, I think all year we would have gone with whatever, you know, people could have made their choice. And nobody should have been shamed or bullied. So my only concern now is if we're going back with this optional policy and we'll vote on it on June 22nd with the idea of it starting whenever, whether it be July 1st or whatever, you know, maybe it's time that I stand up and say, okay, well, if we need something in there, though, we need some kind of a statement that says no one is allowed to bully or shame you for wearing it or not wearing it, because that seems to be where our problem has been, is that people have not followed the PE guidance. They've not followed the medical exemption piece. They've, you know, and the group that's, I don't hear any adults. There's no consequences, like, for the adults here. It's all the consequences have been on our kids.
Yeah. That's a good point.
There are no consequences in that, correct? That was all X'd out.
Correct.
Correct. Any other comment? Is that okay if we can move forward with the policy? Okay, Mr. Penley, thank you.
And
we won't.
And yeah. Did you prefer the effective date June 22nd instead of July 1st?
It have to be the 23rd.
Yeah, that's something we can discuss further at our board meeting. I'd like for us to be able to think. Oh, do you need that?
I was just to address that. I would prefer to amend paragraph D, effective date, the policy shall become effective upon approval by the board.
Okay, that would be fine. Is that all right with everyone?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Thank you very much. It's been quite a difficult decision this morning. And we are adjourned. We'll see you at 3:30 at our school board meeting.